We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friends, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about grave robbers from outer space?
There's quite enough reverberation on that. It only sounds like he's inside a gymnasium. It really ought to sound like he's inside an empty coliseum. Okay, now I'm all confused about the Plan 9 opening that we just played, which is Chris. And by the way, I got the opening and I got the close, and we'll play the close later on. Later on in the future of the program, which is where you and I will spend the rest of our lives. I'm so confused about that because he says, the terrible story of grave robbers from outer space. Is that how it actually goes in the film? In the actual movie Plan 9 from Outer Space, does it say the terrible story of Plan 9 from Outer Space? Or does he say Grave Robbers? Because I know that Grave Robber was the original title of Plan 9 from Outer Space. This is really the most trivial of things. Really, I mean, even in terms of this program, this is just the most trivial of discussions. But the original title of Plan 9 from Outer Space was Grave Robbers from Outer Space, which I know then Ed Wood had to change because the Christian guys who were backing the film, like the Baptist guys who had invested all the money in the film, complained about the title because they felt that it was sacrilegious. And then he had to change it to Plan 9. Maybe that's some like alternate intro. Because here's the thing, the other thing about this, before we do the actual intro of the show and the whole and the whatnot, as many times as Plan 9 from Outer Space is referenced by everybody in the entertainment industry because it's just such a gold standard, it's such a benchmark, I mean, it is the very definition of an iconographic film. I don't think I've actually watched Plan 9 from Outer Space front to back more than two or three times in my life. Because really, how often can you do that? How many times can you sit down on the sofa and subject yourself to Plan 9 from Outer Space all the way through? I mean, you got to fortify yourself with really just the strongest of chemicals to make it all the... It's like watching that movie Robot Monster. If you ever get a chance to watch a movie called Robot Monster from like 19... how many the hell is it from? When did we land on the moon? 69? So pre that, like 61... Robot Monster, which is also called Monsters from the Moon and Monsters from Mars, depending on which version of the VHS tape you get, because I don't think it's out on DVD yet. It's fantastic. It just consists of some idiots wandering around in what looks to be like a bad section of Pasadena, attacked by a guy in a gorilla suit with a television on his head. It's like they couldn't find an entire costume. And so they did find like the lower half of a gorilla costume. So from the neck down, the creature is a gorilla. Like the most ill-fitting, like big-ass zipper up the back. And then they took a television, removed the glass part from the front of it, and stuck it on his head. There you go. You're a robot monster. Go. And that was it. Director, I think, tried to kill himself like a day and a half after the movie came out. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that. But the movie came out and it grossed like $7. The director tossed himself off a building somewhere. But live. All right. Well, whatever. Hello there. It's 5 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and this the month of June of the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. Live from the lushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio, this, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Wednesday, and welcome to day 12. Thank you for coming by. If you'd like to join us today to share your recollections of Plan 9 from Outer Space, Robot Monster, or what have you, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And I do believe all electronic devices and network applications are running normally as of today. I think everything is back to speed, up to snuff. We're back to being gold again today. So it's 503-733-2970. You want to email us, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. And or Sarah at 970.am, Tim at 970.am, or Scotty J at 970.am. It's 503-733-2970. Here's what's coming up today. I'm still not entirely sure about this. I got to get with Scotty and figure this out, because originally the Bullet Boys are going to be in the studio with us today, like in the 2 o'clock hour. But now apparently it may be... It's all just like the shifting sands of interviewing. So originally it was going to be at least, I think, Mark Torres. I got to figure out the definitive pronunciation of that guy's last name. It's T-O-R-I-E-N, and I think it's Torian. But, you know, I don't want to get the guy in the studio and then mangle his name. That's going to be bad. So the Bullet Boys guy was going to be in the studio with it, but now it may be him and or Chip's Enough from Enough's Enough. Oh, too bad your friend Lisa's not.
Oh,
there.
Yeah, Lisa. Yeah. When we were talking about it, she's like, his name's Chip's Enough. She was writing me all these messages about it.
He is an attractive man. And or one of the guys from Brittany Fox. But it may be all of them, none of them, some of them. It's all very
This is how little I know. I thought Brittany Fox was a chick.
No. No, they just... Brittany Fox was great, though. In fact, I pulled a Brittany Fox song to play today, actually. So we'll play a little part of Girl School later, which is, I think, the definitive Brittany Fox song, which is fantastic. Girl School is a great song. And the great thing about Brittany Fox was they had this one guy in the band who looked just like John Lovitz, as though he'd been dressed by Hot Topic. Like it was... He was... I mean, I shouldn't say this. I don't even know if he's in the band anymore. I mean, I would be lying if I said that I had in my head like a definitive member list of Brittany Fox readily accessible inside my brain. And if I was able to somehow compare that with the guys who are in the band now, I really would. I'm not going to pretend to know more than I do about Brittany Fox. But there was this one guy in Brittany Fox who were huge for about 8 months in the 80s. I mean, they really were big. And then they sort of vanished. But this guy looked like John Lovitz. Short, kind of squat, as they say. Bit of a gut, kind of a fat face, what looked to be some terrible David St. Hubbins Spinal Tap blonde wig, but then with like frilled cuffs and like a crushed velvet, like purple jacket. I mean, just totally like a bad, it was like John Lovitz as Lestat kind of a thing. It didn't really even work as well as I'm making it sound. Anyway, so Brittany Fox, Enough's Enough, and Bullet Boys tonight at Outlaws. And so we'll be talking to some combination of those bands later on in the show. What else today? CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard is going to join us. Apparently they're serving a subpoena to somebody at the White House, so that's exciting. We're also going to talk about... Well, immigration, because it's what we do. I am going to get some additional thoughts from her on the Rush concert that she went to last week, speaking of live musical activities. What else? Amanda Moyer is going to join us to talk a little bit more about Chris. Did you call him Chris Beignet on the phone this morning?
They were really good in New Orleans.
My name is Chris Beignet, and I am a donut. I say to you today, I am a Frankfurter. I'll never get tired of that. Do we have any audio of John Kennedy saying he's a donut? Do we know where that is? Somebody will send that to me. Somebody find the audio of John Kennedy calling himself a Berliner, which is a donut. I'll never get... And that's one of those things that you always think is an urban legend because you don't think it can possibly be true. Did somebody... They must not have had advanced teams like they have now. John F. Kennedy said, I say to you today, I am a donut. What else? I don't even lost my whole train of thought. Jim Roop will be here to talk about Paris Hilton, who is on Larry King tonight. I got to go to TiVo.
What time is Larry King even on?
6 o'clock, I think, Eastern. Maybe. Something. When does the Larry King come down on the... What time does Larry King come on, Tim?
Six.
Like 6 o'clock Western or Pacific time, whatever the hell we are. Western time.
6 o'clock here.
How you doing over there?
I'm working on that donut speech.
I got it on YouTube.
Okay. Hey, why do they say Eastern time and Pacific time? Why don't they say...
It's different time zones.
No, I understand that. I guess what I'm asking is...
Different.
They are a master day, then we get hard. What is this? No, I think that's different.
I
think you're playing
Kennedy
something
Berlino.
Else. No, I think Tim's looking for it right now.
I got it.
I guess, really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Want to hear it?
Yes.
Do it.
Keep in mind, by the way, a Berliner is a donut.
2,000 years ago, proudest boast was, Kiwis Romanus Sum. Today, in the world of freedom, the proudest boast is,
I am a donut. And then they're all cheering. They're all cheering because he's the president, so you have to cheer it. He's Kennedy. You're obliged to get a standing ovation. What did he say? He's a donut. Okay? Let's cheer. Excellent. I just want to know why there's... not why there are different time zones, Tim, and why there are names to differentiate them. I'm saying it doesn't make any sense that there's Eastern and Pacific. Why wouldn't it be Eastern and Western or Atlantic and Pacific?
Oh, that's true.
There's no internal consistency to the naming system for our time zones.
Then there's Central and Mountain?
Yeah, but nobody lives in Mountain. And nobody lives in Central. I don't even know what states those are.
Chicago?
Do you know what time zone Chicago's in?
The Central time zone.
Are you making that up?
No, I know that for a fact.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
That's one of those
things.
All
their TV shows arrive an hour before ours.
I was about to allege that no one anywhere knew that, but apparently everybody knows that but me.
Yeah.
Apparently it was exactly the opposite of what I thought. What else is coming up today? Scotty J has a rather perplexing top five that we've been meaning to get to. We'll try to get to that today. We'll talk to our good friend, Mr. Skin, and we'll answer the magical question, what was Scotty J's first automobile? It's 503-733-2970. By the way, apparently we have a clarification on the Criswell opening to Plan 9 from Outer Space. Apparently Criswell insisted on phrasing it that way. Because I guess whatever Criswell wanted, Criswell got. And Robot Monster came out in 1953. So there you go. Yes, the director did indeed attempt to kill himself. Stephen King apparently said he once practically laughed himself into a hernia when he watched Robot Monster while stoned. Seriously, you go to like Mike Clark's Movie Madness, you rent yourself Robot Monster, they got it there. And I don't advocate using chemicals to put yourself into some sort of alternate state of consciousness. I'm just saying, if you do those things, you watch Robot Monster, I swear to God, you got to get like a... You put something rubber and waterproof down on your couch beforehand. That's all I'm saying. Joined today, as always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dylan, how are you today?
I'm good. I wish I would have remembered that we're having guests and that I would have tried to look a little decent.
Yeah, you look fine.
Yeah. Well, just kind of a black t-shirt kind of band.
Spoken like a guy. Yeah, you look fine. Let's leave. We're going to be late for the movie.
No, I didn't ride my bike today either. I feel kind of lazy. And I don't think somebody else did.
I didn't ride my bike at all.
I saw your car in the parking lot.
I have a good reason for it, though.
Okay, do tell.
I don't have a good reason.
I wanted to go get a bagel and a smoothie this morning instead of actually ride my bike.
I am a bagel. I had to, I have to work. And then I got a thing at 6, and then I got the Bullet Boys Enough's Enough thing that and I woke up late, and I was just like, F that. That was my attitude. Although, I got to say this. The problem with CBS here is that there's very little parking at this building. Now, we have parking, which is more than we can say for when we work downtown at the Coin Tower. But there's very little parking, and if you do not get here in time, you have to double park, which sucks, because anytime anybody else wants to move, you got to go, move your car around and let somebody else out. So that's the key. If you're running late, you got to be here, otherwise you have to double park.
I'm double parked right now.
Yeah, it's a bad...
I saw you at a spot, though.
Well, I got here early enough, but you dally and then you get screwed. Let's see here. Oh, wait, apparently we have a time zone clarification. Hello, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, there actually is an Atlantic time zone. It's like the tip of Maine and then eastern Canada.
Oh, yeah, New Brunswick.
Yeah, Labrador and all that crazy stuff.
You know, it just mystifies me, the kind of knowledge that lurks inside Tim's head that I don't have access to all the time. You knew that there was a different time zone for New Brunswick?
Yeah.
So they're 4 hours ahead of us?
Yes.
Let me understand this. Are you telling me
New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, that part of Canada?
I thought Nova Scotia was a foreign country.
It was at one time, but it was taken over by Canada.
Okay, but it's still not, it's not part of America, though.
No, it's part of Canada.
Is it a country?
No, it is not.
What is it?
The province.
It's a province of Canada.
A province is like a state.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. So are you telling me that there are four time zones in America? No, wait.
No, there's
Hawaii and Alaska.
Hawaii and Alaska.
Well, they don't really count. Alaska?
Yeah.
But Alaska is just directly above us.
No, it is not. It's up to
way
the
west.
It's up to the west.
So retarded. I don't even know these things.
I think Alaska's an hour behind us.
Did you know that Baja California is in Mexico?
Yes.
That's the only contribution I have to this. That's my only...
Well, that is correct.
It is. And there's that nutcase. What is that state that doesn't do... daylight savings? Is it Phoenix?
Arizona.
Yeah, and I think Illinois. I think there's like one town in Illinois that doesn't do daylight savings time.
Now my wife deals with...
That's Indiana.
...places back there, and there's like counties. It goes from county to county.
All right. So there are actually... So we actually have, what, six different time zones?
At least.
As part of the United States. The whole thing is confusing. All right, thank you, sir.
All righty, bye.
All right. Tim Riley's working on the, we're not calculating the time difference between here and New Brunswick, is working on the following stories for your edification.
I've been to New Brunswick before.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that where they make bowling balls?
I went there to see Reversing Falls, but it wasn't working.
What?
It was the natural wonder of New Brunswick, that you put your car into neutral.
Oh, and it rolls uphill.
Oh, that was Magnetic Hill, which worked. Magnetic Hill worked, but Reversing Falls did not work.
What is Reversing Falls?
Well, it was, No, that was in Halifax. Actually, Nova Scotia, the falls were supposed to go in reverse, but they weren't working that
way. When you say a waterfall, they went in reverse,
yeah.
But the water went up?
Yeah.
How does that...
Well, it was a lie.
Oh. I was going to ask how it works. The answer is apparently badly.
It was a, new, it was a Halifax wives tale to try to get tourists to come into town.
So it's not. It's just a thing that doesn't even exist, that they just lie about it, and
apparently
then you go
there
and it doesn't work?
No, it didn't work.
All right. Well, what is that place?
It did work.
Yeah, but so that's the place where it's like it's a hill, and you put your car in neutral, but your car rolls up the hill.
That's correct.
Well, how is that even possible?
I don't know, but it worked.
Really? Did it freak you out?
No, because I expected it.
All right. Anywho. I don't even know where to go from here. I'm a donut. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
The body of the pilot of that downed Oregon National Guard F-15 has been found off the coast. Tony Blair has been replaced, but he already got a new job without even having to go look for one. That condemned Texas killer has been killed without delivering the promised final joke.
Boo.
The amputated fisherman's fingers have been reattached, and we won't talk about Paris Hilton much.
Well, I only to say this, that she's on Larry King, so I gotta go to TiVo. And, wait, hold on, let me just, I gotta go to TiVo, actually, and set that to record. Because I'm gonna be at the thing tonight. I'm gonna be at the rock show. So I gotta make sure that I'm able to do it, that I'm able to watch that. So she's on, I guess at 6 o'clock tonight. Somebody told me that 6 o'clock that Paris Hilton said, well, I guess I could watch that then, but now I got a thing I got to do. But anyway, so I'll watch it tonight.
Oh, here it is, Magnetic Hill, fascinating places in cool Canada.
And so the deal is that you park your car there, and then your car, now, the car doesn't really roll uphill. So it's some sort of optical illusion?
It is a wild and wacky place that appears to defy gravity. For years, people have been entertained by driving their car to the bottom of the hill, putting their car in neutral, and watching as their car rolls backwards with them up the hill.
Well, that doesn't even seem possible, Tim.
Well, you have to go there and find out yourself.
Seems to defy. Oh, we should
have sent... Magnetic Hill, New Brunswick.
We should have sent... What's his name there? We should have sent cross-country Nate there. All right. Well, it's okay. It's my fault for failing to plan and planning to fail.
It's all part of cool Canada with interesting people, incredible inventions, and Canadian giants.
Okay. Well, it's time to... Time to spin the wheel of show questions. Okay, it's landed on Read a Random News Story. I'm going to read this random news story, and then we got to talk to Scotty real briefly, and then we're going to take a break. This is from the Associated Press. Hey, do you know what the most hated words on the Internet are? And these are Internet-based words. These are words having to do with the net.
Oh,
I didn't even know where to go with that.
I was reading about Reversing Falls.
Never mind. I'll just read it.
Yes, you tell.
Blog... No one hates the word blog. Who hates the word blog?
I hate the word blog.
No, you
I
don't.
Love the word blog.
Really? You know what I hate? I
it
hate
reminds me of blob.
I can't get enough of this.
I love blog. Doesn't blog sound like it ought to be some sort of squishy food? Blog sounds like it ought to be some sort of slime-based product that you give to your children, but that has a lot of nutrients in it. I hate blogosphere. Let me say that right now. People will talk about that. Pundits will talk about, well, you know, the word in the blogosphere, which I guess is what they use to describe the assemblage of blogs out there. I don't mind blog because it's simply, it's an abbreviation, or maybe not an abbreviation, it's a contraction of weblog. I don't really mind blog. Blog, netiquette. Cookie and wiki. The word wiki kind of bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it shouldn't. I know it's an actual term. That
it sounds childish.
It seems... You know the thing about wiki? Like, when, you know, I use Wikipedia all the time, but when I first discovered Wikipedia and I did not know that wiki, I guess, is an actual word that means like a communal project, wiki just bugged me because it just seemed cutesy. It just seems too cutesy and just too, I don't know, it just seems smarmy. Let's see. Topping the list of words most likely to make users wince was... Folksonomy. That's fake. A term for web classification. Oh, here we go. Blogosphere. Also hated.
Uh-huh.
See, but this is the thing that happens with the Internet now. If they just start compressing, they start contracting two words together like this. Blook.
Blook?
Blook. B-L-O-O-K. A book. based on a blog. That's a made-up term.
A book based on... That's too many bees.
No, it's a journalist. This is a journalist trying to create a story by fabricating words that don't exist and that no one really uses. Let's see. Oh, did you see? You know what I finally took the other day? Speaking of netiquette and internet terminology, I finally took that CBS thing about how to handle email, the cost and convenience of email.
I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I know everybody else took it like 6 months ago. But I took the one about not saying the MF word on the air, and then I took the one about... Not telling the new secretary how you like it when she wears short skirts or whatever. But I got a reminder from CBS that I hadn't taken the test about how to deal with email. What's fantastic about that is they specifically tell you when you take the CBS test about how to handle email, it is apparently a CBS mandate that you are not to use LOL in any of your inter-office email correspondence. That's why one of the questions that you have to answer toward the end is it or is it not correct to use LOL when replying to an email? And apparently you are not supposed to use that. Let me get these calls, then we'll talk to Scotty, and then we'll take a break, come back with Lisa Goddard. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What do you got, brother?
Oh, I just want to let you know, besides tweakers and drunk Indians, Klamath Falls, Oregon has one tourist attraction.
All right, that's your observation, sir. That's not something that the Rick Emerson Show would endorse.
Oh, I know that. I grew up there. It's okay.
It's fine.
I got some drunk Indian in me. But, excuse me. Sorry.
Again, these statements don't really represent the opinion of the Rick Emerson Show.
Okay,
or Les Moonves. All right, go ahead, sir. How can I help you?
I forget the name of the road. I think it might be Old Fort Road on the way to the dump. There's one of those hills where you can drive your car bottom hill and turn it in neutral, and it'll drive up the hill by itself.
Okay, but how does that... See, it...
They say that there's two stories. The people who say what it really is an optical illusion. It's really rolling downhill, but the way the landscape is, it appears downhill. But
all right.
I've gotten out of the car and watched somebody else do it. I've stood on the side of the road and watched the car roll uphill. I don't care. It always looks like it's rolling uphill to me.
All right. Okay. Fair enough.
Can I tell you the local legend?
Yes. Does this have to do with the shower at Sarah's house turning itself on?
No.
Does it involve an Indian burial ground?
Maybe.
Does it involve, like, an Asian girl with stringy hair climbing out of my television in the middle of the night?
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
You pretty much hit the nail on the head there. The local legend is that the restless Indian spirits don't want your car there and they're pushing it up the hill. Why? I don't know.
Why would the Indians do a lot of work for me if they're pissed off? Angry and white man pushes car up hill. Show him. That doesn't even make any sense. You feel like if the Indians were really angry, they would not want to help me in any way. They wouldn't want to move my car at all.
I don't know.
All right. They don't even get tips? All right.
Thank you.
All right, one more.
Okay, have you checked your email?
No.
Okay, the engineer sent out an email saying, you know, about all the problems about yesterday.
Yeah.
Scotty J replies to the entire company. Nice job. Thanks for all of your help on behalf of the Emerson Show.
Oh, God.
Scotty.
Did he reply to everybody in the...
He replied to everybody.
Thanks, Scotty.
Are we part of the new Live from the Web Carpet on more than 100 CBS station website?
We are indeed. Tonight at 6:30 at 970.am, you'll be able to see Live from the Web Carpet premiere of the new Transformers film.
Wow, how cool is that?
It is. You'll be able to go to, we've been talking about that a little bit, you'll be able to go to 970.am tonight at 6 p.m. 6:30 p.m. tonight at 970.am. See Live from the Web Carpet, a live broadcast of the Transformers movie premiere.
It includes Shia LaBeouf and John Turturro.
It does. It's all very exciting.
Oh, that's the Mann National Theater. What are they changing
now? Why did Scotty reply to the entire company when...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
He's up, Scotty.
He's embarrassing us.
So, Les Moonves and Katie Couric both got this from Scotty J?
Yes. Let's welcome down to the Rick Emerson Show, Intrepid PA Scotty J.
Good morning.
Okay.
Everybody.
Have you taken the CBS test about the cost and convenience of email?
No, but I think I cost a bunch of people a bunch of time, apparently, by sending
it
to the whole company.
Did you just hit reply all?
I did, because in the header area...
What do we always say about hitting reply all on inter-office emails?
I understand that, but the email names that were in front of me were just a few technicians, so I thought it was just going to like four or five people.
I didn't realize that there was a little pull down.
Mark Whalen.
Oh, great. Thanks so much. CC the general manager on all your correspondence from now on.
Well, you know what?
Here's the thing. Did you hit reply all?
I did.
Okay.
That won't happen again.
Let me ask you this. When you opened the email and read it initially...
It looked like there were only four people.
No, it didn't.
Good to me.
Don't lie. That's a lie. Why even?
That's why I sent it. I just saw a couple of technicians' names.
Do you have the... Okay. We're going to go check your email right now.
Okay.
I didn't get one, Scotty.
In fact, Sarah, do you have your cell phone?
I do.
All right. Can we? Can you dial the on the dial-in number here? I know we're late, but
see, I didn't see the pull-down thing on it.
No, we're gonna go check your email. We're gonna go check your email right now. So if you can dial, and then I'll use because we don't have a microphone at Scotty's studio. We're gonna go check this email right now, and then we'll.
All right.
All right.
We're gonna go. We're gonna go check this, and then we'll take a break.
All right.
Why?
That sounds like
Scotty. I know. I don't think he really meant to.
No, but I dispute his contention that it wasn't labeled as to who it was going to be going to.
Well, honestly, it does say CC, and it does have four names, so one of those is Mark Whalen. Like, right. I don't know.
Please to go to your trash, Scotty, and find the what you were responding to.
So that goes to everyone.
Okay, but now let's go to the... Hold on, but let's go to the original email here. This is the First Avenue upgrade from Troy Harrington. Okay, oh, for the love of God, I'm looking at it right here. Here's what it says. From Troy. You didn't read that, really?
It's a total professional email, too.
Listen, it says in big letters, from. Okay, just hold on. Hold on. Scott's just making a defense. I'm looking at the email to Scotty. It says in huge letters, Mark Whalen, Stan Mack, the general manager here at CBS Radio Portland, Will Price, Brian Jones. And then right above that, in bold type, it says, all First Avenue staff. So in addition to going to both the general managers, it then says in huge bold letters, all of First Avenue staff. So then, let me ask you about hitting reply all. Now, why did you do that?
On behalf of the Rick Emerson Show, I wanted to thank
you. I know you wanted to thank you. You wanted to thank every single person in the building. Everything, even those who had nothing to do with it.
To the grave of Edward R. Murrow.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So, there you go. Next time, try to send like a 5-meg attachment with that, too. And a whole bunch of graphics. And something that just beeps and starts playing music.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll back after this. The Rick Emerson Show continues next with Lisa Goddard, Amanda Moyer, Jim Roop, and the Noon News Hour. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. You know, when Scotty hits that reply all, and he says, on behalf of the Rick Emerson Show, as he CCs the whole company on something pointless, what he's really saying is, on behalf of Sarah Dillon, Tim Riley, Rick Emerson, I now am wasting your time.
And, of course, myself, Scotty J.
And the best part is, they just put out a company-wide email last week saying, don't do that. Don't hit reply all on meaningless, trivial crap. Thanks so much, Scotty. All right. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show now, CNN radio correspondent from the Hill. Correspondent to the Stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there.
The reply all is fantastic.
Now, does this happen to you? Does this happen to you? Scotty is now saying on the screen that we're ungrateful. Really?
Oh.
You want to stick with that answer, Scotty? Uh-huh. Does this happen at your firm, Lisa, where somebody will hit a reply all and suddenly they're responding to the entire company about, like, a mysterious Tupperware container in the fridge?
Yeah, we had one this morning. Some guy who needs some day in August off was explaining why he needed it off.
We're in three different buildings here, just in Portland. There's three buildings. There's us, there's one downtown, and then there's one sort of north of us, and that's just CBS Radio. Portland is in three different buildings, and literally there was a conversation that went on the other day about, like, somebody was missing a coffee cup or a pen or something. And everybody in all three buildings in the entire city got about 45 emails back and forth from two people arguing about where a pen had gone to.
Here it is. Just a quick reminder about emailing in bold. Also, if you're applying to more than one person, be careful about not using the reply to all function.
Yeah, seriously. Scotty?
All right, so. The one that gets me that now I'm really careful about because I got so burned by it is when you hit reply instead of hitting forward.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there was a certain white supremacist organization that sent me an email. I was doing a story in South Carolina. I can't remember what the story was. Sent me an email, and their spokesman's last name was heavily ironic, given the organization. And so I was trying to forward it to someone else and say, how about the last name on the spokesman? But instead, sent it back to the spokesman.
Oh, and so you're taunting a white supremacist via email. That's going to end badly.
A supremacist about his last name.
Well, have you... Okay, now can I say this now? Because we're both in the media, maybe it's just... it's what somebody called the van on the corner syndrome, which is when you buy a car, suddenly you notice the car everywhere or whatever. It's a heightened awareness. Am I the only one? Maybe it's just because I'm in the media. But do you feel like there are, except maybe we just notice this more, but do you feel like that happens a lot where there is someone There is someone tied to some group like that, like some nutcase supremacist or separatist group. And just to punish them preemptively for being idiots, God tags them with some heavily ironic last name.
Yes,
I can tell you, living
do it all the time.
Living
yes.
in the Northwest, the number of supremacists that like would show up in the news and it was like, you know, Jethro Black, you know, white supremacist. And it's like, you just wonder if God knew in advance that they were just going to be some bigoted nitwit and he thought he would just, you know, just give them a little extra burden right from the very beginning, which is just great, you know? So, the forward and the reply, I'll do that sometimes too, where, you know, somebody will be complaining about something. Like, I'll get somebody on the staff who sends me an email complaining about something. I will then, and I have to be very careful, though, because I will forward their complaint to someone else. You know, someone above me or someone lateral to me in the company with a, like, look at this whining email from this person. How are we going to deal with this crap? You know, and I once or twice, I hit the reply button, and I have to stop myself and close it. And so I have actually gone so far as to, occasionally, when I think I might accidentally hit reply, like, I immediately, like, hit the off button on the computer, just trying to stop the whole thing in its tracks. You know what I mean? Oh, God. All right. Well, in any event. Hey, a word that always makes my heart feel a little bit warmer. There are subpoenas being issued. Is this?
I knew you'd be happy with
that. Yeah, I don't even care what it's about. Just subpoena and White House in the same sentence. What's happening?
Vice President as well.
Oh, good times. Well, please do explain to me what's going on.
All right. So, basically what's happening is the Democrats feel like they've given the White House enough time. Or at least the Democrats feel like they've waited long enough to make it look like they were going to give the White House enough time. Either way, the Democrats are now pouncing on the White House with subpoenas in a couple of areas. We saw a few weeks ago subpoenas when it came to the firing of U.S. attorneys. We saw two sets of subpoenas on that. But this is on the NSA wiretaps. That's a wiretap program whereby the administration secretly was listening in on some American phone calls. They say the other end of the phone call was overseas and someone on the call was a terror suspect, but there's really been no one to check on exactly who they were listening in on, and there was no one oversaw to approve the program from the outside. It was approved all from the inside without any warrants. So the senators have been asking for documents on this for a year and a half. They haven't gotten any. There's a big surprise there. And now what's happening is the Senate Judiciary Committee is saying, we now get it. You're not responding, so we're going to subpoena you.
Oh, fantastic.
The White House has said in response that they will respond to these subpoenas, however, they called this an unfortunate and confrontational move by Democrats.
Well, you know, and there's a whole circular bit of logic on this eavesdropping, wiretapping thing, right? Because I'm unclear about when the government, the U.S. government, can listen to phone calls if you're talking to somebody in another country. Because if you're talking to somebody in a country that they think the person's a terrorist, but again, how would they know that unless they're already listening?
Right.
I mean, it's just, I don't even understand when the U.S. government can monitor my phone calls if I'm talking to someone in, like, you know, Syria.
I don't know enough about the technology, but I suspect if they are monitoring, let's say they have an area, a very specific area or a very specific person overseas who they're watching, I believe they would have the technology, if they know how that person's communicating, to follow that communication if it comes to the United States. And from there, they would monitor. That's the theory, I think. But we don't really know who's being watched here. We don't know if these are people who are friends of friends of friends, or if these are people who are directly connected. We're not really sure who it is that is being monitored. But I think in theory, that's how they would find them. The issue here is, in the United States, American citizens, actually people, anyone in the United States, is not to be covertly spied upon. I guess that's spied upon. We'll just leave it at that. A little verbose. I can't talk today. Anyway,
that's okay. No, I mean,
people are not. You cannot spy on an American. You cannot listen in on American phone calls, wiretaps, those kinds of things without a warrant, except in this case, apparently. And the president is the one who authorized it. He authorized it every 45 days. And its opponents say it is on incredibly shaky legal ground. And they say they've never heard a complete legal justification from the White House for how they authorized this. The White House has said it was under the president's war powers, that that's his powers in the Constitution. They also indicate that it has to do with laws that Congress passed after 9/11, but they were very blanket laws saying that the president must defend the country, that he must go after terrorists, that kind of thing. The White House has said that that allowed the president to do this. Others have said that that's poppycock and that there's nothing to that, and they want to see more legal justification. Now, this also goes to that story about how Alberto Gonzalez, when he was the president's lawyer at the White House, raced over to then-Attorney General John Ashcroft's bedside in a hospital. He was trying to get Ashcroft to say that this program was legally justifiable. Ashcroft wouldn't do it. Neither would the man who was filling in for him at the time. And so this does connect to Alberto Gonzalez and the calls for his resignation. And that's one reason Democrats are pouncing. But there are some very serious questions about balance of power here that Democrats are trying to get to the bottom of.
And of course, when the Bush administration, when any president says war powers or national security, like national security is sort of the irreconcilable differences of the political, of the spying world, right? Because like when you can't come up with any other reason, that's what you say. It's like when divorcing comes. Well, it's irreconcilable difference. Well, no, who knows what that could mean, anything.
Well, it's possible, and there's really been a change in tone up here, and even in the last week. I know Christine Todd Whitman was testifying yesterday, I think it was, or 2 days ago, about the health effects after September 11th, the respiratory problems they've been having in New York. And she was defending herself and saying that she felt like she did what she could, and she presented the scientific evidence at the time. But someone was really pounding away at her, and then she started saying, my son was in one of those towers, and he survived, but this is personal. And then the congressman, I believe it was Keith Ellison of Michigan, said, listen, I'm tired of you guys saying it's personal. I'm sorry your son was in that building, but that's not the point. Later on, she went on to say something about, how the real enemy is the terrorist. And another congressman said, give me a break. We know the enemy is a terrorist. But the fact is, we're getting at whether or not you did something wrong. They really were railing. We're tired of hearing about the terrorists and blaming the terrorists, talking about who was in those buildings, talking about those victims. Let's talk about the decisions you all made. And that's been a change of tone. No coincidence that because Democrats are in charge. And they want to get to the bottom of this, you would hope. But this is also very political. This scores political points for them as well.
And just as a side note, this just come out. This is sort of a bad time for this to come out for the Bush administration, because it was just, like 6,000 pages of documents coming out from the CIA about how they were like, I don't know, injecting people with like plutonium microchips into their head or something for 35 years and not telling anybody about it. And
yes, which is one of my friends I pass when I come in on the metro. It is a great guy. I don't know if he's homeless or not, but he may be. And he sort of stands outside Union Station with a sign telling people how the CIA was implanting people with various things throughout the years. And I'm really concerned, because now he's going to be like, see? It's true. And now I got to go talk to him. Maybe he knows a lot more than I thought.
There you go.
But we are getting these documents about CIA assassination plots, those kinds of things that we're learning a lot more about.
It's an exciting world, Lisa Goddard. All right.
Is the word I was looking for.
What's that?
Redundant.
Redundant, yes. It's okay. You know what? I have those days. It's like some days you just can't type.
It's been the last hour. It's just been choo-choo. Yeah.
Have you ever had those days where you sit down in front of the keyboard and it's like you've got invisible boxing gloves on? It's like you try to hit the L and you're hitting like the K and the 9 and the... Yeah.
Insane. Exactly.
No? All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Go ingest some caffeine. That always works for me.
Oh, caffeine is so great.
All right. And be sure to hit reply all on everything you do today. And be sure to attach lurid photographs to it as well. That also plays out well within the company. All right. Thank you, Lisa.
Okay.
All right, CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Let me just say this, Scotty.
Scotty's active. He's sending me angry emails.
About what?
He just wrote, feel free to tell everyone on behalf of the Emerson Show that you retract the statement of thanks for the engineer's hard work yesterday. My bad.
Okay. There's no need to be snarky about
Scotty. I don't know, it's defensive much. Well, I tried to do a good thing and made a mistake, and now it's a joke. Oh. Oh, I think it sucks, because I'll heal and get over it with a few toddies.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Scotty is too sensitive.
Yeah, see, but here's the thing about Scotty. Scotty is filled with zeal. I will give him that. It's the whole lot of, I should reply to everyone in the company, but telling them about this exciting new, I will say he is a go-getter in that sense. I'm no one to talk to. I will say this, that Motorola Q I've got, which is like it's like a BlackBerry. I really do love that thing, except it took me forever. A listener had to tell me how to lock the keyboard when I wasn't using it. Because there are several times when I'd have that my phone in my pocket, and I would lean on it just wrong. And I would take it out of my pocket to do something, and I would realize that I had actually started an email to somebody just by leaning on the keys in the right combination. That I would sort of sit, I would shift in my chair, and I would sort of accidentally hit some button combination, and I would, you know, and I would be busy composing an email to, you know, it was just to Sumner Redstone or something. See, you don't have to be kind of careful with those things. We'll get to Amanda Moyer here in a second. This is Dan. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Dan, hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
Hey, here's the weird thing. I grew up in Klamath Falls, too, and I didn't think anybody knew about that place.
This is the car where you're, or the hill where your car rolls uphill
exactly.
or whatever?
Exactly. And it's just what the guy said. It's on Old Fort Road. It's near where the old Oregon Technical Institute College was. And the story I heard was, once again, Indian spirits, but there were Indian spirits that were like Indian little people called Goganos.
Now, when you say little people, do you mean like Indian midgets?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I always heard. They're called the Goganos, and what they would do is they would just push your car off the hill. Don't know why.
You know, here's... Now, this is interesting because this is sort of a... This is a variation. I'm kind of fascinated with urban legends. I used to live in Utah where Jan Harold Brundvand lives, and he's the guy who wrote The Choking Doberman, and he wrote, you know, he's what the hell else was that book? The Vanishing Hitchhiker. He's considered the world's foremost expert on urban folklore, urban legends, we call them. And I've interviewed him a bunch of times about this because I find urban legends fascinating, and urban legends and ghost stories are very similar. But there's a similar ghost story that I think it's in Florida or someplace where there's some like lake or some pond where like a school bus full of kids tipped in like 50 years ago and they all drown or whatever. And there've been all these reports of people who will drive by or they've driven by the pond or they parked by the pond, and then later there's like miniature handprints all over the back of their car or something. And it's just, so there's sort of a variation on that. I will have to say this. I was just telling Lisa Goddard that the president calling, the president using the phrase national security to justify something is sort of like irreconcilable differences being used by every divorcing couple. The local variation on that is Indian burial ground being used to justify anything weird that happens anywhere, anytime, to any. When Sarah's shower went on the other day, I got 50 emails, Indian burial ground, you know, it really does make you sad for people who are buried in Indian burial grounds. They're not around to defend themselves. They just take the blame for everything. It's like a recently fired member of your company. You know what I mean? They fire some guy last week. Everything that goes wrong for the next month will be pinned on the guy who just got fired. Right or wrong, fairly or unfairly, the guy who got fired last week will have every single problem put right on him. So, all right. Anyway, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rick.
All right. God bless you. Fantastic. Well, we were supposed to get Amanda Moyer here, but it doesn't look like we'll get to who the rest of these calls here in a second. It doesn't look like we're going to be hearing from her. Scotty, do we know if you're talking to us? Do we know the deal with Amanda Moyer? All right. Well, I'll take this call. Go ahead and see if we can track her down. Talk about this. I mean, there's really not much to report except I think the WWE is now saying I don't really even care about this Chris Benoit story all that much at this point. I mean, it seems pretty self-explanatory. Except that the WWE, because they got hit so hard with that steroid scandal, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, they're just, I mean, they are just like apoplectic about this allegation that he was on steroids. So I guess they're claiming that wasn't the case. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Jared, what's up?
Hey, Rick, I'm the Laughing Colorado guy from yesterday.
The Laughing Colorado guy.
Hey, because the lightning friends would get struck by lightning.
Oh, yeah, right.
I lived in Santa Cruz for a long time, and there's a place called the Mystery Spot where you can do that sort of thing, where you can put a level on two stones, and it's level, but if somebody's taller or somebody's shorter, near the same height, or balls that roll uphill and things like that.
Well, yeah, there's one of those houses somewhere. I don't know if this is the same thing you're talking about. There's some house.
I bet it is.
There's some house where it's like if you stand on one corner of the room and like your friend stands on the other corner of the room, like they look 6 inches tall or something.
We used to go in there and just go into there and we would take like all of our speed squares because we're construction guys. So
right.
We'd take our speed squares and our levels and everything. And it's totally an optical illusion. It's just creative construction work, basically.
Excellent. All right. Thank you,
if
sir.
If you want one, I'll build one for you.
We'll have that for our next listener party.
All right. Bye.
Thank you. There you go. All right. It's 503-733-2170. Well, you know what? We're just going to pull the pin. We'll take a break here in a second. We'll come back. Tim Riley, the new news hour. That's on the way. Don't forget a couple things. A, tonight, 6:30 at 970.am, the web carpet cast for the Transformers movie premiere with Shia, what's his name, and the guy, and John Turturro. And what is John Turturro? Is he the voice of Bumblebee or something? I don't even know. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to pretend that I care about the Transformers film, but I know there are many, many people who do.
We're going to care because of that bet with Gordon Fatboy.
Yeah, no, that's the thing.
We'll sponsor their show for a week.
I will care when it opens. I'll care when it opens, and I'll care about that first week's grosses because that Gordon Fatboy bet is riding on that. I don't care about the actual film itself, and I know a lot of dudes are into the idea of that film. So that's at 6 o'clock tonight at 970.am, a live webcast of the Transformers movie premiere. Also, while you're there, click to find out more about our 777 promotion, which we've been playing a bunch of promos for. You're going to be hearing a lot about it. That is at Outlaws next Saturday, not this coming Saturday, but a week from Saturday, 7707 at Outlaws. I just was talking to Susan Reynolds about it this morning. Huge pile of stuff that we're going to be giving away. We're going to be doing giveaways every 7 minutes while we're there. And, of course, Vanilla Ice is going to be headlining that night.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be there. It's going to be very exciting. Oh, this is Amanda Moyer. Okay, well, let's quickly do this, and then we'll take a break and come back with the news hour. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta, Amanda Moyer. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So we talked real briefly yesterday about Chris Benoit, and I'm kind of ready to sort of put this story on a shelf, I guess, just because it's depressing. But the thing to me is, I read this morning. Am I right about this, that the WWE is now very zealously insisting that there was no steroid use by this guy?
That's what they're saying. And there's with all the allegations of roid rage, the WWE is saying that because it was deliberate and how the Bibles were left next to the bodies and how the lapse in time between the deaths, they're saying that that couldn't possibly have been steroids, so they're just completely denouncing all accusations that he was on steroids.
So is that so? In other words, they're simply using the circumstances of the crime to say that they, because they don't, did they, here's a dumb question, the WWE, did they test for steroids?
Actually, they did on April 10th, and Benoit did test negative for steroids.
All right. Because I know that they had that huge scandal back in, I don't know, what, 94, 95, something like that. Even about 10 years ago, there was some big investigation, and there were hearings about steroid use, and I know McMahon himself got called into court about it. There were lawsuits and whatnot, so.
Right, and that's why they're so adamant about it right now, saying that that wasn't the reason. But what we do know for sure is that Benoit had received drug deliveries from a company that sold steroids, I think, in Florida.
Now,
so,
I think the police had actually said, though, at one point, and maybe they've retracted this, but I believe the authorities actually said that there were anabolic steroids found in the house.
There were. They said there were anabolic steroids found in the home. They wouldn't say where they were located, but that they were there and they were going to look into it further.
All right. Okay. Well, it continues to become more unpleasant as we knew it would. All right. Amanda Moyer. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Sure.
All right. Amanda Moyer in the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta. All right, good. Take a break. Come back. Tim Riley at the AM 970 Ministry of Truth at the new News Hour. Later on, James Roop will be joining us and so forth. You stay there. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Cheetah is the fastest head of on Earth. China only has one time zone. This is by the will of the People's Communist Party. Interesting.
That's strange.
I don't even know if that's true. It sounds like a thing that's probably true, though. It's like that guy, who was it we knew that went to North Korea or China or someplace? I say, sounding like an Indian American. North Korea or China. No, but it was a country that had a very strong rule of law. And I think it was Smokey who'd gone there. It's like everybody you talk to. So, how's the weather going to be today? The weather will be fine, as per our glorious leader. All right, 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a warm welcome to the Reverend Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
The Oregon Air National Guard has identified the F-15 pilot whose body was recovered off the coast. He's 34-year-old Major Gregory Young. He was 34. He was from St. Helens. His aircraft went down around 1:35 yesterday afternoon, about 35 miles from Cannon Beach. The fighter jet was out of the Portland Air Base. It was on a training mission with three other F-15s and four F-18s out of Fort Worth, Texas. Apparently, the Air Force has 400 active duty F-15s, and the National Guard has 126. F-15 pilots are highly trained and highly skilled. When they're not in the air, they're in the classroom reviewing emergency procedures and combat tactics. So, this fighter jet has been in service since 1972. It was designed for combat fighting. And that comes out of their office at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. It's a dogfighter.
So this is, but I mean, is there any reason, any given why he crashed?
No. Yeah.
All right, so that's that.
Well, a Portland man has pled guilty to illegally selling the horns of the black rhinoceros, one of Africa's most endangered species. Shavings of the horn were sold for alleged medicinal uses at Far East Trading. That's a shop in downtown Portland.
Really? Are you kidding me?
No.
This is 2007. Mm-hmm. Who's going? Far East Trading, is that a local company or is that part of a chain?
Let's see here. It is owned by someone named Mortiza Ali.
Far East Trading Company. I don't even know where that... Does it say where it was located?
It just says downtown.
I'm trying to figure out if that's... it was like a reputable shop or
downtown.
Just some guy selling things out of a backpack?
Well, it violated the Endangered Species Act, and the horns, which are... The horns contain no bones, according to scientists. Any medicinal value for humans, apparently, they don't have it.
Well, no. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think they just proved that like 1,000 years ago. All right. Never mind. I don't really care about the environment or whatever, but whenever I read about it,
black rhinos,
yes, whenever, that's just too far. No, whenever you read about these guys, like poaching guys who go out there and, you know, they just ambush some animal, there's like four of them left in the world, and there's, you know, some guy with a Winchester out there to make a weekend of it deciding to shoot them in the face. I always root for those animals just to give that guy a good goring, right in the crotch.
Their skulls make a great ashtray.
Seriously.
For any rhino you know.
It's true.
An Ocean Shores, a Washington man who cut off his two fingertips, we told you about this yesterday, so he could escape from a sinking boat, had them reattached at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. The hospital won't confirm the operation on 51-year-old William Messinger. Why won't they? I don't know. But he works with the Washington State Labor Council. The operation was a success. Circulation has returned to his fingertips. Using a pocket knife, Messinger cut off his fingertips Sunday when his hand was pinned in a fishing boat up against a log in the Rainucci River.
I don't even know how that works. I'm looking at my fingertips. Does it say how much of the fingertips?
No.
I'm wondering...
Oh, fingertips are short.
Is there bone in your fingertip?
Yes, there are bones in your fingers.
You can't cut through your bone with a pocket knife.
I'm not sure. I wasn't there.
I mean, you can't...
I mean, they're separated, though, if you cut through a joint.
Oh, I don't know why that freaks me out so much.
Oh, and it's lunchtime, too.
Seriously. I'm just saying, the idea of cutting through your bone is bad enough. The idea of cutting through a joint, which I guess would hurt less, actually is more unnerving to me. I don't really know why. I'm not quite sure why that is. I guess you'd be in shock, though. I mean, if your hand was crushed in something, maybe you wouldn't feel it. Let's not think about it.
From Linwood comes word, two drivers are arrested early this morning after they allegedly sped by a state trooper at 141 miles an hour. This is on I-5. A BMW 330i and a Honda Accord were in a race. They sped by him in the northbound lanes at the 44th Street exit. The trooper clocked the BMW at 141 miles an hour, which should come as no surprise, but the Honda was right behind it and was keeping pace. So the Honda, well, that's a good deal if it keeps up with the BMW. The trooper spotted cars, and it pulled them over with the I-5 interchange at I-405. The cars stopped to let one of the BMW drivers ride in the Honda.
I don't understand anything in the story. So there's
they were racing the car. Then they pulled over because...
They just had to swap?
Yeah, the passengers wanted to ride.
Okay. Man, let's just...
Both drivers, a 22-year-old man and 18-year-old, were arrested and booked in Snohomish County Jail for reckless driving.
Oh, there you go.
Danger. What not? Well, three families in Washington State say it's a prank that went way too far. For the past 4 months, the families claim they've been harassed and threatened by mysterious cell phone stalkers who track their every move.
Oh, God.
The families say it's something out of a bad horror movie with the culprits leaving death threats on their cell phones. The stalkers know everything their victims do, from slicing limes in the kitchen to attending baseball games.
Is this the story Clive was talking about the other day? Is this in Tacoma?
This is in Fir Crest.
Where's Fir Crest?
I don't know.
Is it in Washington?
Yes, it is.
Well, is Fir Crest near Tacoma? Sarah? Anything? Fir Crest?
Never Tacoma? Heard of Fir Crest.
Well, this will put Fir Crest on the map. Darcy Price, one of the victims, says her family has gone to the police for help.
We have no idea. It's just someone who we feel is stalking 16-year-old teenage girls and their families. That's all we have a clue about right now, and other than that, we just don't know.
Well, okay. So try not to stalk.
Especially if you're in Fir Crest. Well, Britain has a new prime minister. He is Gordon Brown. He spoke this morning.
On this day, I remember words that have stayed with me since my childhood. My school motto, I will try my utmost. This is my promise to all of the people of Britain. And now let the work of change begin.
Just a massive stick jammed right up there. That's exactly what that guy sounds like. He sounds like every British guy in every movie made before 1975. You know what I mean? Like a bad, stodgy Alec Guinness.
Prime Minister Brown says he will follow a path for brand new England.
I've heard the need for change. Change in our NHS, change in our schools, change with affordable housing, change to build trust in government, change to protect and extend the British way of life. And this need for change cannot be met by the old politics.
Oh, God, listen to this guy's actually making me sleepy. Can we say the era of the young, sexy prime minister is at an end?
Right.
This guy doesn't really sound either.
Well, first Bill Clinton left office, and then Tony Blair was kind of a holdover from that era.
I suppose, yeah, because there was this brief moment where we were going to get guys who were under the age of 90. I don't know what this guy looks like. What's his name? Gordon Brown?
Yeah.
All right.
He's born in 1951.
Yeah, he sounds like that... What's his name? It's not so funny now. Is it funny, man? He sounds like that guy.
Yeah.
Whoever that guy. Mr. Creedy?
Him. Former Prime Minister Tony Blair wasn't out of work for long. Major Western powers have named him as the new Middle Eastern envoy. Whatever that does, he's pleased to... I guess he didn't even have to fill out an application.
The absolute priority is to try to give effect to what is now the consensus across the international community that the only way of bringing stability and peace to the Middle East is a two-state solution.
Sure, that makes sense.
Sure, why not?
What do people think in Russia about Tony Blair?
I find him a very nice person. I think he's a really smart and efficient politician. But I was a bit disappointed with his support of American intrusion to Iraq and all that story.
Yeah, when we've lost Russia, we've lost the entire world, Tim.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Ivan?
Tony Blair is a kind of politician who will be more valuable in the future. The next generation will understand how good he was for democracy in Iraq.
My family's dinner is a piece of wood. Apparently, Furcrest is an upscale neighborhood in Tacoma. Really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just read that without even... I didn't even pre-read that.
How could that be?
That's just a ridiculous statement. They have indoor plumbing. All right, well, whatever. I think this is the same family Clyde was talking about. But except... I say that may not be true, but based on the anecdotal evidence, I think the story you read about these people in Furcrest being stalked over the phone is the same story Clyde had, except see how you were able to read that whole story without saying that they were being called by the devil and that the cell phone was ringing even when the battery was taken out. This guy says, Rick, you are a tard. Even Oregon has two time zones. I don't know whether me being a tard is independent of the... Oregon doesn't have two time zones. That's ridiculous.
Part of it might be a mountain time. It's the part that doesn't matter.
Where the whole swath of states, the irrelevant time zone.
Once you get outside, like 30 miles outside the I-5 corridor, there's nothing important there. Nobody else wanted it, so they made it part of Oregon.
There's Eastern
it's
time...
Dirt. Unwanted dirt.
There's Eastern time, Pacific time, and other. That's what it is. It's sort of like... You know those middle states are? It's sort of like when you get something in the mail, but it's just occupant.
Yeah.
You know? Tim Riley, or current resident. Let's see. Oh, Furcrest is within the city limits of Tacoma, but it still smells, says Rod. All right, let's see. Rick, are you making up the I am a donut thing? Didn't he say, Ich bin ein Berliner, or whatever? Yeah, but that means I'm a donut. That's the thing. When you say, I don't want to rehash the whole thing, but that is like saying... It's like going to Hamburg. So I am a hamburger, which makes me laugh.
I am a hamburglar.
Nobody's a hamburglar. I don't think the hamburglar exists anymore. I don't really know the answer to that now that I think about it, but I don't think there is a hamburger. You know, in fact, all of those...
That was scary.
Not as scary as Mr. Yuck, but the hamburglar was sort of interesting. And I wonder if they got rid of the hamburglar because he glorified crime.
Oh, that could have been, yeah.
Now that I think about it, I don't think any of those McDonaldland characters still exist. When is the last time you saw an ad for any of the McDonaldland characters?
Well, I fast forward through commercials.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah, it was just Ronald.
Do you remember any of the McDonaldland characters?
I remember the Hamburglar.
Do you remember Mayor McCheese?
Yes.
Do you remember the Fry Guys?
They were just a box of fries with eyes, weren't they?
I don't think they were a box, though. I think that they were a little, like a bush. They were a fry bush. They were... Frybush City Limits presents. No, I think
I remember going in when I was little in McDonald's. There's like a big old metal like Hamburglar thing that was made out of a giant hamburger with bars on it, and you could climb up the middle and then
yeah, there was the playset.
Boy, they would glamorize crime, did it?
Let me just say this: they don't have those anymore. They don't have any of those playthings with bars because there was always some idiot kid that would stick his head through there, and then the parents are going to have to weld the bars apart or whatever. They have to get an acetylene torch. His junior had his head stuck between two bars up in the fried tree. There was Mayor McCheese. There was the sheriff, who I believe his name was simply Big Mac. I'm right in my wheelhouse now. There was McDonald. There was Ronald McDonald. There were the Fry Guys, and I don't believe they were boxes of fries. I do believe the Fry Guys were just, there's no pretty word for this, clumps of fries within a pair of legs. And then, of course, we're forgetting the most famous, the Big Bird, one might say, of the McDonaldland universe.
I guess we did forget.
You don't even remember it?
I remember the purple thing.
What was his name?
Oh, I don't know.
The purple thing.
Was that a bird? I didn't think it was a bird.
No, I'm saying, but he is sort of
a big gumdrop.
He is sort of the Big Bird of the, of the whatever.
There was a bird involved?
No.
I don't know. What is his first name start with?
See, you're going to get bounced right out of you're going to get bounced right out of the hot talk genre, Sarah, if you can't adequately reference these pop culture icons. All right, I'm not going to give it away yet. We'll see if it comes to you. No, we'll see. I'll reveal it later. I'll reveal it when we go to break. If you don't come up with it, I'll reveal it.
Okay.
All right. Let's get some of these. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. We do have two time zones. We have mountain time, too.
So is that like Eastern Oregon is mountain time?
Yeah, you go into the very eastern part of the state around Jordan Valley and stuff, and it's mountain time there.
Well, that's just confusing. And there ought to be, the time zone thing ought to follow the state line, don't you think?
Well, what's really confusing is you're driving down the main highways there, you'll go through a sign that says mountain zone, mountain time, set your clocks ahead 1 hour, and then 2 miles down the street, you'll go back into Pacific time. And it does that all the it changes like... It just depends on where where the curve of the road is.
It's totally bizarre. I mean, it seems like it ought to follow the state better. You know what? I don't really care about this, but I'm just going to say it does. They give this country to me. I'll have this place run so much better in just like a year. Because first of all, time zone boundaries again ought to follow state boundaries. Meaning, Oregon has a time zone, but then when you like Washington would be Pacific time, but then when you cross into Idaho, it becomes Pacific time, which is really
amazing. Too is that covers only like 3 people out there because there's absolutely nobody out there.
Seriously, and don't even get me started on this business of the area codes and the incompetence with which Oregon administrates those. I'm not going to accept it all. All right, thank you. All right.
Two actors played the Hamburglar.
Really?
Yeah. He was introduced in 1971.
Didn't the Hamburglar, he didn't really have any facial features, right? It was a plastic mask.
Well, apparently, the character changed from the 1970s to the 1980s from a more sinister to a more cartoonish face.
He became a ham gangster.
The age of the character also changed, as originally he was depicted as an older man, but today is shown as a less sinister young boy. And the vocabulary has been expanded. Originally, he said nothing more than rabble, rabble, rabble.
I was just going to say that.
Now he speaks ordinary English.
Yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm.
He just said rabble, rabble. I totally remember that.
But he outlived some of the other McDonald's icons, including Captain Crook.
The Captain Crook!
McDonald's filet fish sandwiches.
He was a pirate.
Yes, he was.
I totally remember that. Mm-hmm. I didn't remember it until just now. Captain Crook, he was a pirate who they got rid of. Fantastic. Oh, here's somebody who knows about Tacoma. Hello, sir.
Hello, Rick and Sarah and all the Emerson Nation.
And the rest.
Tim.
Hello, Rick
Rubble,
and Sarah Rubble. And the others. And
hey,
the other voices.
That's how the ship's wheel spins around at the end.
Totally.
It doesn't show anybody.
Hey, I wanted to give you guys a little insight into what Furcrest is. It's a district in Tacoma, and, Sarah, you may know about it, having lived in Bremerton for a while, because you had to pass through Tacoma. But, Furcrest, an upscale community in Tacoma, one, that's a misnomer.
Yes.
But two, Furcrest, at the time that it was conceived, which I would guess to be about the mid-50s, what they built in there was a bunch of smallish kind of, I would say maybe 1,500 square foot brick homes,
and they still look like the 1950s. So no, not a beautiful place.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It seems like a whole just the whole idea of an upscale neighborhood. You know, it's like upscale Yakult. You know,
that
makes sense at all.
Oh, well, that entire Tacoma Nally Valley is like, you know, as, you know, from The Great Gatsby, it's like the Valley of the Ashes.
Fantastic. Good on the Gatsby reference, too.
Yes, well done.
Sir. All right, thank you, my friend.
No, one more quick question.
Yes, sir.
Will I see you tonight at the show at Outlaws?
I am going to be there, yeah, tonight. Bullet Boys, Brittany Fox, Enough's Enough, and Pale Rider. I will be there, yes, indeed.
Now, what time does the music start for that?
You know, I never know. There's sort of like, we were talking about time zones. You know, there's Eastern, Mountain, Central, Pacific, and then there's bar time. So when it says, like, music starts at 10, which always means, like, 4 in the morning. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. But, yeah, I will be there tonight. I saw Bullet Boys last time they were here, but so I'm going to see them, but I want to see Brittany Fox, too. And I've never seen Enough's Enough, so I'm curious about those guys.
Love Enough's Enough, and looking forward to seeing Brittany Fox as well. See you at the show. Thanks.
All right, there you go. Thank you. All right. Here's Tim Riley. Rubble.
I'm looking for more... Oh, the evil grimace.
See? That's what it was, Sarah. It's grimace.
I knew it began with a G, but I couldn't figure it out.
But see, I know that this sounds like I'm doing a bad knockoff of whatever that thing from Will Wheaton's thing from Stand By Me. But, I mean, Sheriff Mac is a Big Mac. I am a donut. Mayor McCheese is a cheeseburger. Ronald is a clown. What is grimace?
What is a grimace?
Oh, is that the purple thing?
Yeah, but, I mean, what... This sounds like almost we're doing like a bad parody of our own show here. But seriously, what is the grimace?
Is it the grimace? I thought his name was Grimace. He isn't a grimace. I think it's
the grimace. Grimace is the phylum. Grimace is the species.
Ronald McDonald and friends in the Hamburglar Touch.
Oh, it is a purple thing.
Okay. Bet Hamburglar wishes everything he touches would turn to McDonald's cheeseburgers.
Is that the Hamburglar?
The Hamburglar, and then this purple thing.
Don't touch the grimace.
Touch my face.
You haven't touched your cheeseburger.
What is the evil? It looks like a big bathroom carpet.
But he's purple, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, so he just, I mean, is he supposed to be? Here's the only thing I've been able to, surmise, and this is simply, I have no evidence for this. The only thing I ever came up with when I was a kid about the grimace is that the grimace was actually the contents of a milkshake without a cup. Like he was just sort of, he was actually just the milkshake itself.
He is large and purple with short arms and legs. Let's see, his common expression is the word duh.
Wait, does he work upstairs?
He is portrayed as a well-meaning doofus.
Yeah. Yes.
In a comic foil.
I'm sorry.
He is not intended to be anything specific.
He works down here.
Probably making a mess in the kitchen right now.
Rick, there was Mayor McCheese, the Hamburglar, Big Mac, the Fry Guys. Oh, they were sacks of fries, apparently. Filet-O-Fish.
The Grimace is Ronald McDonald's best friend, by the way.
I didn't know there was a Filet-O-Fish. I don't remember there being a Filet-O-Fish character. And the Grimace. He said, and this says, they added McNuggets later, but I don't accept them as McCharacters. It's all very confusing. Let's see. We could be talking about, I don't know, we could be talking about Rwanda right now or something. Matt, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, the French fry guys were the French fry goblins, and they would eat your French fries if they had a chance.
Wait, no, hold on a second. Now I'm confused. I thought that they were not sacks of French fries with legs?
They were. They were made out of French fries, but they were the French fry goblins, and I think that's how they...
So they were cannibals.
They ate themselves for their power.
So the French fry goblins, let me just get very clear on this. The French fry goblins were large anthropomorphic sacks of fry with legs who would then steal their brothers and sisters from you and eat them.
Correct.
Well, that is just messed up. That ain't right.
And also, down by the outlet stores in Troutdale, the McDonald's, they actually still have those characters. They're painted all over the walls, and it's a new one. I hadn't seen them in about 20 years. And
really?
My kids out there, I'm like, oh, my God.
I wonder if they still have the Playland with bars.
No, it's made out of recycled tennis shoes or whatever they make them out of now.
Fantastic.
Most Greshamites would be familiar with the Playland with bars.
I was just going to say, we're going to acclimate them early to that sort of setting.
That's not Playland, that's visiting day for Daddy.
Well done, look at you. Sorry, playa. All right.
Thank you.
All right, have a good one.
Yeah, those old playgrounds were really dangerous.
Yeah, no, totally.
I remember there was like sharp metal edges, and there's this like this huge tube in the middle. You have to climb up this like ladder, and you're crawling around with a bunch of strange kids trapped in a barred like, hamburger.
And I
remember
totally the barred hamburger. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah,
it was
you'd be in there and be like, Mom!
It was a metal tube with a hole welded out of
and
the middle,
climb
or
into
cut out of the middle,
and go up.
You could totally have gotten wedged in that tube.
Uh-huh.
And then yeah, you're up in a hamburger that is basically like Lady Elaine Aberlin's thing on Mr. Rogers. But a hamburger with bars. And then, of course, there was that metal slide you go down that was like big plates of metal badly riveted together.
Oh, my God, like just stapled onto there.
Totally catch yourself on the edge. All right.
And broken glass distributed evenly throughout the ride?
Yeah, seriously. Big bags of nails sprinkled over on the grass. The Playland they've got now at fast food places is so much better than what we had. As kids, really, the stuff we had growing up cannot hold a candle to those playlands they got now. I really am kind of jealous of those. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, the Senate ruled today, killing a Republican proposal that would require all illegal immigrants to return home. It also defeated a Democratic bid to restrict legal status in the United States to 4 years. So nothing ever happens with this.
Okay,
thing.
But this is just... It's just illogical. Regardless of how one feels, I'm looking at you, Tom Potter. Regardless of how one feels about illegal immigration,
yes,
that just doesn't make any sense. I mean,
everybody line up and go home.
Having an immigration bill that requires you to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have something already called that? Isn't that called a law? I mean,
we don't follow the law anymore.
I mean,
it's cruel.
I'm just saying it doesn't make logical sense. They are already illegal immigrants.
Right.
And whether you think they ought to be allowed to stay or not or whatever, leave that aside for a second. That's just redundant. Having a law that says that illegal immigrants need to go home as part of this new bill doesn't make any sense because there's a reason we call them illegal immigrants. We already had a law saying stay home, which they have disregarded.
Well, blame Kay Bailey from Texas. She came up with this plan.
I thought she was Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
Oh, yeah, Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
All right. Are they the same person?
Yes, they are.
All right.
She just wanted an extra name.
We have this Rick. Grimace is, this is true. Grimace is the schmoo of the McDonald's world. That's true. The schmoo was his own creation. The schmoo was his own, that was his name and his identity. That's what he was. All right. Rick, if his name is Hamburglar, why does he crave cheeseburgers? That's just stupid, says this email. I believe we're poking
off. How does this even start?
I don't really remember.
Really wanted to talk about what's going on in Washington.
Well, what are we
going
to do? Talk to the boring prime minister guy from Britain?
So, anyway, I say to you, I am a shepherd's pie.
On this day, I remember words that have stayed with me since my childhood.
Yeah, fantastic. Let's just, all right. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, the Senate Judiciary Committee subpoenaed the White House and Vice President Cheney's office today for documents relating to President Bush's warrant-free eavesdropping program.
Mm-hmm.
They will never comply. A child's tantrum on board a Delta commuter flight forced a pilot to make an emergency landing in Philadelphia. The forced landing was caused by a fight over apple juice. The four-year-old wanted apple juice. When the stewardess didn't get it quick enough, the child threw a tantrum.
Oh. The parents ought to be beaten. Those parents ought to be beaten savagely.
There will be no charges filed against the child.
Are you... Well, I mean, but... I'm sorry. I can't think about it too much. Because, you know, I'm going to skip a reasoned dialogue and go right to screaming. So, childlike. So they're on a plane. This is in America?
Yes.
So the kid wants apple juice. Doesn't get it. The kid begins a tantrum of such proportions that the pilot has to land the plane?
Yes.
All right. Parents ought to be beaten, savagely. I'm just going to reiterate my previous statement. That's all I had to say about it.
I have heard the need for change.
Thank you. Okay, now, look, I know that this has now just become its own thing. People are now sending me pictures of the French fry goblins. Scott, are you in the studio? Okay, just checking, because there's some calls here.
He may be sending emails.
He's busy replying all to every single thing in
individually.
The larger penis? I'm sold! Let's see. Rick, oh, by the way, the final McDonald's character. Don't forget Mac Tonight. That's right, he was the singing moon.
Yeah.
He sang...
I thought that was the best one.
To Mac the Knife. He sang Mac Tonight. And the McNuggets kid signed McRib is back. All right. Let's see, what else? Rick, did you ever notice that the Hamburglar and the Tauntauns from Empire Strikes Back speak the same language? Yes, you can cut open a Hamburglar and live in his stomach. Let's see, what else do we have here? Well, let me look at the... Oh, is this somebody who's going to make... Oh, I'm sorry. He may be 10 seconds too late. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
I am 10 seconds too late.
You were going to make a Mac Tonight reference.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what the hell happened to him? He was the coolest.
I don't know. I think they still use his picture, though, because actually there's a McDonald's downtown by PSU, and they have the Mac Tonight guy in the window. So I think they still use him at some rogue McDonald's locations.
Remember, he had the cool shades, and he used to lay on the moon.
Totally. No, but I think he was a moon. Wasn't his head a big crescent moon?
Well, yeah, he was a half moon, but he used to lay on the moon.
Well, that just defies logic. That's like the French fry guys eating their own. It just doesn't make any sense. All right.
And then they had those little skateboard character figurines of them.
Oh, I remember that too. That was just embarrassing. All right. Thank you.
All right. Later.
Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, Tony Snow says Indiana Republican Senator Richard Lugar has some questions about the future of Iraq.
We think it's important to allow the Baghdad security plan to work. But if you take a look at what Senator Lugar is trying to figure out is what configuration is going to be conducive in the long run to success and also building greater bipartisan support.
I don't think he said that. Here he is again.
I think that other Republicans will be thinking a great deal about what we are all faced with, and that is simply that the surge continues on, but there is no possibility for 21,000 brave Americans to be in every place in Iraq every day.
And by the way, we don't forget that, let's see, this is another Republican senator, Senator George Voinovich of Ohio, who said, quote, about Iraq, "I think everybody knows that we fumbled the ball right from the beginning on this," end quote. Said it is time for military disengagement from the Iraq war. So that house is falling apart from within.
Why not send the CIA in to fix that? They do so well at everything.
Send an exploding cigar over.
That'd be great.
Rick, this reminds me, back in the day, I remember my friend Shane getting second-degree burns on his ass and thighs as he slid down that metal McDonald's slide in the summer because they never thought to cover a sheet metal slide from the beaming sun. Nothing says McFun like a blood-curdling scream of pain as your thighs are burnt. And he said, oh, by the way, kids pee in that bubble bin. Sign, rabble, rabble. All right. Tim Riley.
What's the president up to? He is visiting an Islamic center in Washington, D.C. He's talking about the struggle for freedom in Afghanistan and Iraq.
So it'll take time for liberty to flower. The democratic future is not a plan imposed by Western nations. It is a future that the people of the region will seize for themselves.
No. No, that's just stupid. That's not going to happen.
It's idiotic.
That's just BS is what that is.
The flower of democracy.
The liberty. The thing is, if you listen to it with just half an ear, it sounds like Liberty Deflower, which would be a great name for a porn star. The Taking of Liberty Deflower. That's great. I'm writing it down. Liberty Deflower. There ought to be some sort of patriotic porn film called Deflower of Liberty. I'm sorry. We should take a break here.
So soon?
It's 12:35. Doesn't seem like it, does it, Tim?
Is that in Western Oregon or Eastern Oregon?
In Russia, we're already done. Time flies when you are discussing the etymology of the Grimace character, though. All right, get back. Somebody has a definitive information about the shmoo, by the way. And another listener has identified exactly the smell of a McDonald's playground. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Dwight Yoakam. Back after this. Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop about Paris Hilton. Also the top five. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, condemned prisoner Patrick Knight was executed last night for the deaths of an Amarillo area couple without delivering that promised last joke. Even soliciting jokes on his website, sometimes receiving as many as 20 a day. He said his humor was intended to raise the spirits of other inmates and received as many as 1,300 proposals. But when the moment came, he thanked God for his friends.
Ooh.
I know.
has no sense of community. And he thanked God and his friends and asked for help for innocent men on death row. He named several. He said were innocent. His voice shaking and nearly in tears, he said, not all of us are innocent, but there are those. So there is no joke.
Let's see. I'm going to his website now to see if it's actually still up. We had some jokes submitted. Hold on a second. Dead man walking. Or no, dead man. It was dead man laughing. That's
dead man laughing.
Dead men tell no jokes. Let's see. I can't even find it. All right. Well, we'll look later. All right. Let's do this. Let's see. We got a schmoo clarification. Hello, sir.
How are you today, Rick?
What's up, brother?
The schmoo was actually created by Al Capp, who was the cartoonist who did Little Abner.
Okay.
The schmoo was a little amorphic creature about 2 feet tall.
Oh, I know what the schmoo looked like. Yeah, he was...
I want to stick to a target of right across his tusk area.
And
they live for being kicked by other people as the cathartic experience.
And he had, well, and the schmoo had whiskers too, right?
Correct.
All right. So
always a smile on his face, and, you know, I'm a little older than most of your target demographic, but, you know, the old Al Capp, Little Abner series was a kind of a transition for me. It introduced me to Frank Frazetta's art. He did a lot of the girls on that, like Moonbeam and Twine.
Now, the schmoo was also in an animated series in the 70s, but I can't remember exactly which one. The schmoo showed up on, like, some television program in which it didn't belong at all, like literally like Captain Caveman or something. And, you know, the guy Captain Caveman plus the schmoo. Like, it made no sense at all. The schmoo started being a guest character on all kinds of weird shows in the 70s. So, all right, excellent. Thank you, sir. There's your schmoo clarification. And finally, hello, you have an observation about McDonaldland playgrounds.
I do, yeah. You know, it's funny, like, we're talking about this, and it's bringing me back to my youth memories, but... you know, the one thing I remember about the McDonald's playground was, you know, when you crawl up into the little, the sheriff and whatnot, it smelled like rotten ketchup.
That's exactly what it smelled, rotten ketchup and dirty feet.
Oh, God. And, like, the bunch of, like, teenagers were, like, getting up in the top and squirting the little ketchup packets, and all of them smelled like that.
Is
so,
there anything more revolting, by the way, than when you're walking through a fast food restaurant parking lot or the playground or whatever, and there's one of those ketchup packets that's been on the ground that somebody has stepped on by mistake, and it's just all baked in the sun? That's one of the most revolting things. That this whole conversation is making Tim scratch himself and unpleasant facial.
That's why I called in there. Very good.
Hey, job accomplished, sir. Thanks.
Right on.
All right, there you go. By the way, not to get bogged down on this again, I'm looking at this photograph of the McDonaldland characters. Hmm. There is Ronald McDonald. There is the Grimace. And then there is this female bird character. Is she the McChicken? She must be the McChicken.
Oh, I think she is, actually.
I don't remember her. I think she's after
your time.
I remember
she was always flying. Wasn't she in, like, an airplane or something?
How creepy that there's a character whose relatives we are presumably eating. All right, well, whatever. The Hamburglar. And then there are the Fry Guys, who appear to neither be... That caller was totally winding me up. They are neither sacks of French fries... Nor are they anthropomorphic bunches of fries. They're just little balls of fuzz with legs. They appear to be nothing at all. I have no idea what the Fry Guys are. They're like the schmoo. They are their own creature, like Grimace. Let's quit talking about this. Here's Tim Ryan.
Australia has sent John Stamos packing after a couple of bizarre television appearances. He was unshaven and gum-chewing, appeared slightly disoriented, and slurred his speech during an interview on television.
Very soon.
Yeah, I've
had. Now, you know what we have, which I'm really excited about, which I haven't mentioned to our audience yet?
Weird hat.
Priscilla, Queen of the Dead. Priscilla is a fantastic show in Sydney. It's on its way to Melbourne. But
yeah,
look
it was
at
a
this.
Movie about 20 years
look,
ago, right?
Look at this. This is one of the headpiece. Oh, it's got a headpiece on it.
Right.
Look at that. Yeah. Undo that for me, John.
I will.
There you go. Priscilla are doing this. 14
right.
Priscilla's in this morning, and they're going to do the most magic. So,
are you going to put this thing
hold on? Is it not coming out?
I can't get the head off.
Let me.
Usually.
That's funny, John.
Yeah, I know.
I don't understand what's going on here.
Heads off.
Heads off.
Oh.
Now, we've got four. John, stop it. Put it down.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You only wish.
I'm a two-headed monster.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah.
How many heads you got on this morning? Is this suiting me, or would you like to have a go at it?
You try it.
What do you think? I like it. Is it?
It's not too much for the outfit.
All right,
though,
so here's the deal.
No.
If you can't tell from the audio, John Stamos is standing on the set of this morning chat show.
I'm here for free.
And he's clearly drunk.
Do we
unshaven,
right,
wobbling around on 2 feet.
Invitation
he's pulling the host over
in the
couch.
Half hour.
Yeah.
Look at this. Is this,
all right,
is this
come give Johnny boy a hug.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll take this back home, won't you?
Oh, yeah.
Now he's pulled her onto his lap and he is holding her close with both arms.
You do?
Yeah.
And you got guys, group of guys, you know, handsome.
Whoa.
We'll survive.
Can you read that?
Yes. Thanks, John Stamos. Just after 9:30, find out about loss, drug being evaluated for sale in Australia today. Mm-hmm. And after the break, we continue remembering.
Before we go, do you read Diana, Princess of Wales?
Oh, he just stopped. He just trailed off. He couldn't even finish reading the cue card.
You know, I was there when she got killed. I was in Paris.
Really?
Yeah.
What was Paris like? What was the feeling of Paris?
It was strange. It was a weird deal. We got right on a plane, and then we heard that she got killed.
Killed.
And what a great way to end an interview. Anyone else want to talk about that?
No.
Elvis died, you know, in a toilet. He was fat.
No.
Yes.
Was he drunk?
Huh?
Was he drunk?
No. But he took a lot of drugs. Who else died? My career after coming to Australia.
Never. Listen, John, I call it bad.
Sister on the air. Well done, John Stamos.
Way to keep it together.
Rum and Kokomo, that is a highlight. By the way, here's a little. You know who looks like John Stamos? I was just realizing this, having watched this. You know who bears a passing resemblance to John Stamos?
He's Hamburglar.
It's the rubble guy. He's, what's his name? Greg Glover from 94 from NRK, whatever it's called now, the alternative thing. He kind of, in a weird way, has a little bit of a John Stamos thing going on.
I can see that, a little bit of the ruggedness.
To give him a different nose. He might be a little bit like John Stamos' younger, less drunk brother. What are we doing here? Really? Honestly? Okay, more schmoo calls. Hello, sir.
Rick?
Hi there. How you doing, sir?
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
The schmoo was in a cartoon with Fred Flintstone.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Except that seems weird because they're two entirely different forms of animation. The Flintstones animation, the look and feel of those drawings seems very specific and distinct to me. The schmoo was more of an amorphous kind of, I mean, sort of a vague kind of drawing, sort of an abstract kind of drawing almost.
Kind of like a blob.
Yeah, it really was a blob. So the idea of the Shmoo and Fred Flintstone being together is just strange. That'd be like the Flintstones and like the Powerpuff Girls being together. It doesn't make any sense. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, and one more, and then we're never talking about McDonald Lane characters again. Hi, you have an observation about Birdie the Sandwich Whore.
Yeah, that was Birdie the Early Bird, and she was there to whore sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches.
Yes.
Okay. The other thing that I wanted to touch on was that you've been looking, you said you'd been looking for a race of people to hate. And
let's clarify, we had pondered yes, we're looking for races to hate.
This is not KXL.
I think he's got that. we thought about creating a fictitious group of people to blame all of our woes on.
Well, and I'd like to say that Charles Nelson Reilly, back in 1971 and 72, hosted a cartoon show called Uncle Croc's Block. Now, I don't know if anybody there remembers, but there was a parody of MASH as a cartoon. And these people were stationed in a fictitious country called Upper Sabonia.
Oh, well, that Sabonia is like Slobovia, which was a fictitious Disney character.
Yeah,
Scrooge McDuck was constantly battling people who were from the nation of Slobovia.
So I'm going to have to say that we blame all our woes and problems on those damned Sabonians.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Right.
We're done. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't Slobovia. It was Blagrovia. That's what it was. Scrooge McDuck, oftentimes in the 40s and 50s, well, in the Cold War era anyway, Scrooge McDuck often had villains that he faced who were from Blagrovia, which was a Carl Barks, who was a Scrooge McDuck, a comic artist, fabricated that company. Very clearly supposed to be like an Eastern Bloc kind of a thing. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Michael Moore was on Leno last night. He said the idea for his film came from a trip he took to the headquarters of a man's HMO that wouldn't pay for his life-saving operation.
I went there with him to the headquarters of the HMO, and we conducted his funeral on their lawn.
Yeah, I remember that. He did that as part of The Awful Truth, I think, which was a show that aired on Bravo for a while.
Moore said the U.S. healthcare system needs an overhaul. Or an overhaul.
Or for the soundbite to work.
Well, we need universal health care in this country, and we need it organized, coordinated, and run by the government, and not by private insurance.
iPhone's insanity is now underway. New York is going crazy over the iPhone. Greg Packer of New York is first in line, sitting in his lawn chair, trying to beat the sweltering heat.
I bet he's fat.
How long have you been out here for?
Since 5 a.m. Monday morning.
Oh, yeah.
And how are you holding up? You look pretty comfy here with a glass of lemonade.
Glass of lemonade, cookies. I got water, snacks, and the occasional dinner.
Maybe his girlfriend will come by later to bring him. Maybe the woman with whom he undoubtedly shares his life. Maybe one of his many, many romantic partners will come by to bring him food while he waits in line for a computer product.
Anthony from Queens said the wait was a lot easier for the PlayStation 3.
A week in rain and cold and delivering BS from people? Yeah.
So this is proving to be a little bit easier, huh?
This is tease for me right now. I'm so, like, hyped up like a star, you know? Like, I can do this every day.
Miss New Yorker, thanks to folks waiting in line are a bit crazy.
Is there anything out there that you'd wait a week outside in the seat for?
It's probably $1 million.
Not an iPhone. They have to pay $600 for.
No.
Yeah, these are your people. These are your colleagues, Tim. Your contemporaries.
I didn't say I was going to buy one.
Anthony in Queens, sitting there in a lawn chair, eating Doritos out of a tub while waiting to spend money at the Mac store or whatever. Somebody said, you know, they're really going to jack people is on the plan. We were talking a little bit about that yesterday. The plan for the calling plan is a little pricey. But, you know, I know it sounds like I'm being unduly harsh about the iPhone, but here's the thing that is really the nail in the coffin of the iPhone, for me at least. I'm saying I know there's a bunch of people who are going to buy it, although, did you see there's a Vegas line on people being trampled? The odds are 20-1 now. They're giving 20-1 odds that somebody's actually going to be trampled to death. Trying to get an iPhone when it opens, when they start selling Friday.
That'd be great.
The thing that has put me over the top in not buying an iPhone is the statement Steve Jobs put out the other day that they're already working on the iPhone 2. Like, Apple's already working on the iPhone 2, which will undoubtedly make the iPhone, the original, look clunky and stupid and slow and, you know, whatever. So, I mean, that's... And I guess you always assume that there's going to be an upgrade, but the fact that Apple right now, they said they're already, like, in the testing stages for the version 2.0, which is not a software upgrade. It's an entirely new iPhone that is already being worked on. So I will skip the... I am an early adopter in many ways, but I will be passing on this.
Lindsay Lohan's dad says the stars of young Hollywood today need to watch who they associate with. Michael Lohan says there isn't much cash into the reason that Lindsay and Paris have run into trouble. I don't know what he means by that.
I don't necessarily believe it's the money that corrupts. I believe it's the people around them that corrupt them. And Lindsay and Paris and a bunch of other kids out there are very gifted and they're blessed. And when there's much given, there's much expected. And what God gives, he will surely take away.
Who is this?
Michael Lohan.
I thought he was in prison or something.
Well, he got out long enough to be on Fox.
I'm just speculating. I know this is the case. If memory serves correctly, isn't he a huge cokehead or something? Wouldn't Michael Lohan,
he was just released from his 2-year jail sentence earlier this year and has been granted the ability to see his younger children. He is allowed to visit with 13-year-old Eliana and 10-year-old Dakota during what the court calls therapeutic intervention sessions.
Okay, whatever. You know what I was thinking about yesterday? Because I was thinking about Lindsay Lohan and how her time has come and gone.
As we all are.
Yes. You know whose time has gone, at least for now? What is the last movie Ben Affleck made?
He's busy being a father now, Rick. Okay.
Sure.
No, he was in Hollywood Land.
That's the one I came up with. But then before that, nothing. There's a whole, before and after Hollywoodland, there's a long stretch of a blank is what there is. There's a whole lot of nothing. This email says, hey, dork ass, not only was the Shmoo a goofy aberration in the Flintstones, but what the hell was the Great Gazoo? I do believe he was a Martian. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. You know, you think about a lot of these cartoons now, and it does seem like there was a whole lot of drug use being taken by these, because why would the Flintstones suddenly be visited by a Martian? That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, does it?
You know who voiced the Great Gazoo?
No.
Harvey Korman.
No.
And then the Shmoo appeared on the Flintstones as well. Well, that just doesn't make any sense. All right. Well, whatever. You know what was weird, though, was just Captain Caveman. Captain Caveman is the strangest cartoon. You go back and watch Captain Caveman now. It makes me, I think it made me uncomfortable at the time, actually. I think even when I was like 9 or 10, Captain Caveman made me really weirded out because he was a short man who looked like Cousin It from the Addams Family. He was just covered in hair all the way to his legs, except with his face sticking out. He carried a cudgel around, like a club, and then he was constantly surrounded by buxom women in bikinis who tickled him under the chin and clipped him during whenever he would have some sort of outbreak of anger and start beating people with the club. That's when the women found him especially hot. It's all very strange. I don't know whether it's usually one of those things that you look back on now and you don't really know what was going on in the room when they pitched that whole idea. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, you've probably been wondering, as I have, what Marie Osmond's been up to lately.
Of course.
She wants women to choose to move. The singer and actress is the new spokeswoman for the annual American Heart Association Challenge. Marie says she's a big fan of the program because heart disease is a very personal issue to her.
My mother died of heart problems. My grandmother died of heart problems. My dad has two pacemakers, and I have two brothers with heart problems. So I'm basically a walking time bomb.
I'm crazy.
She pretty much is.
She really is.
But how can you hold it against her, really? She's Marie Osmond.
She really is. She's America's sweetheart, Tim.
Yes.
But wasn't she the one that... She didn't drown her kids. That was Andrea Yates. But
that's coming.
I didn't say that. Wasn't she the one that after Andrea Yates killed her four kids in a bathtub that Marie Osmond's like, well, I myself have struggled with postpartum depression. You know? And it was just...
Well, she takes up and drives up down the coast road to California and is lost for a baby.
And is it...
She doesn't hurt anybody.
Her and Margot Kidder and Anne Heche are hanging out together, shaving each other's heads.
Mm-hmm.
And hasn't she been divorced like three times?
I think only a couple times.
All right. Well,
that's not bad for a Mormon woman.
She was on all kinds of weird postpartum drugs, and she was on Larry King talking about
nothing seems to work.
No, nothing really does. She has full on crazy eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You see Marie Osmond interviewed, and you can tell that somewhere inside there, there's just a clock ticking down to zero, and it's going to be a whole lot of blood happening
somewhere.
Mice
running around up there.
Seriously.
Marie says women are frequently bad about paying attention to their own health.
Dirty.
I would think with eight kids, I would never have a time to sit. But, you know, by the time we run them to the swimming lessons and the soccer and this and that, they're the ones getting all the exercise, not us.
Jesus, really? Eight kids?
Eight kids.
God damn.
So she does take a rest every now and then.
Just a living hell. Just, you know that when you... That, maybe that's the secret. Maybe that's the secret to not fearing death, is you just have a lot of kids, and then you just wait every night for death to come and embrace you. Because it's just going to be the sweetest, most peaceful relief from everything. Scotty is typing on the screen, and she's still hot. She must still be hot, though. She's a beautiful girl.
Yeah, she is.
She really was. I remember, and she just has those perfect Osmond teeth.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Marie Osmond, though, is you kind of got to overlook the fact that she looks so much like Donnie, because that's a little unnerving, actually. She can make a paper rose for me anytime.
Okay, Scotty. Thanks so much. He's really dating himself with that.
I think Scotty dates himself pretty frequently.
Marie shares how she has been implementing this program into her own life.
Now I sit on the stationary bike and I can, you know, catch up on CNN in 30 minutes what's going on in the world and get my exercise. Another thing that I love is that I walk to the grocery food store now. With eight kids, I go three times a week. And then I have my teenage daughter pick me up.
No one... Okay. The grocery food store.
To all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. To all beef patty, special sauce.
Can I just tell you this?
Is that Marie Osmond?
No. No.
I really thought it was.
No. It's a British big... Here's Marie Osmond singing the Big Mac commercial.
To all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles,
that's the B-side
onions,
of Paper Rose.
Sesame seed bun. To all beef.
That's the people who listen online will get it. People who listen to the live stream will. I can never do, and this is a generational failing of mine, I can never do that from memory correctly. Tim, can you?
No.
I can.
Can you? Do it now.
What, to all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun?
I never do it right. I always transpose the pickles and the onions. Always. I always say onions and pickles.
McDonald's, it's Big Mac time for you.
And you're here. here's the thing, and it is really proof of how retarded I am that I view that as a personal failing of mine. Not like my many, you know, not like my many dozens of actual, real, honest failings. Like things that I really should be worried about fixing. I sit and obsess about the fact that I've never been able to do the Big Mac jingle correctly.
Well, apparently there are massive power failures in New York right now.
Really?
New York City, yeah.
Boy, you know, New York City is one of those places, every time there's a power failure, you got to just, everybody's sphincter just tightens up a little bit more.
Everybody to the basement and hope you live.
Let's do one more and then we'll break and we'll come back with Jim Roop about Paris Hilton.
That sounds wonderful. Fashion pioneer Liz Claiborne has died. She was 78.
Really?
Yeah. It's breaking news.
Now, okay.
The cause of death is not immediately known. She retired from day-to-day operations in 1989. She founded her company in 1976 along with her second husband and someone named Leonard Boxer. Her goal was to create a collection of fashions aimed at the growing number of women entering the workforce.
All right. Liz Claiborne, dead. Did she make a perfume or something?
Probably.
Make a lot of makeup and
all right.
Everything.
So she's dead. All right. Take a break here. Come back with Jim Roop. Later on, Mr. Skin from MrSkin.com. We'll talk more to your hero, Scotty J, about various things. And like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7, and so forth. 503-733-2970. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Jim Steinman. Emerson Show, 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, more from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. We're trying to figure out, hey, Scotty, would you do me a favor? Never mind. Just don't give me quiet yet. We'll talk to Jim Roop here in a second. We got to figure out what to deal with it, because there's the Bullet Boys guy, and there's Enough's Enough, and there's Brittany Fox, and I'm so unclear who's coming in and who's not, and when and how and why. It's all very perplexing. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles. I love CNN radio correspondent James Roop. Hello, sir.
Howdy.
How's it? You sound better today. You sound rested. You sound like you're in a good place.
Got a full 4.5 hours, babe.
Fantastic.
I'm feeling good.
One can't ask for more than that. That's what right. Is it that like Tom Cruise says in that movie Taps? Got 2 whole hours this morning. Slept like a baby.
Oh, that's right. I love that movie.
It's beautiful, man.
It's beautiful, man.
You know, you're the only person I can make Taps references to.
No, you got to be kidding me.
No one else gets my Taps jokes. So anyway, all right. So
that's where I got the phrase. At least he had a nodding acquaintance with the real world. When, the Sean Penn character was talking to Tim Hutton.
Right.
About his old man.
That, and I remember the, when...
As you were, soldier.
When Ronnie Cox is at the front gate trying to talk to what's his name? I know you. I know your type. You're not a soldier. You're a death lover.
Yeah.
I love that movie. That movie's fantastic. You know, that's a movie that ought to be remade, except they probably couldn't do it in a post-Columbine era. Now that I think about it, in a post-Columbine world, you probably couldn't get a major studio to make Taps because it's so uncomfortably similar to some things that have happened in real life.
But you may only because there's such a large anti-war sentiment right now.
Maybe.
It'd be tough. It'd be a small independent movie that would do very well at the box office.
I would love to see, as much as I love Taps, I would love to see that movie remade now with sort of an indie sensibility. You know, they make it a little grittier.
Yeah.
And just, you know, because you get, you know, it was still very much a Hollywood film, but I mean, just such a great concept. Just such a great, you know, a revolt and a military academy.
And George C. Scott as General Bache. I mean, that was one level after Patton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Boy, George C. Scott, did you ever see a movie called Angus? It was a teen comedy. Came out in the early 80s, or early 90s, rather.
No.
Probably not. Almost no one did. In fact, I don't even think it's...
I love that movie.
Angus is a beautiful film.
Oh.
I don't even think it's out on DVD.
I love the Flim Flam Man.
Flim Flam Man.
Did you see that?
No, yeah, years ago.
Mordecai?
Yeah. Now, George C. Scott's last, one of his last film roles, if not his last film role, was as the cranky grandfather of sort of a troubled teenager in this teen comedy called Angus, which is a really underrated film. It was a fantastic movie. Kathy Bates, George C. Scott, and then this guy named Charlie Talbert, who just played this kind of a lonely fat kid named Angus. Anyway, it was right before he died, and man, George C. Scott was still hitting it out of the park.
Yeah, yeah.
He has this... He has, oh man, I'm going to see if it's, okay, while we're talking, I apologize for this, Jim, because I know that we're supposed to be talking about real stuff.
I don't care.
You know, we're on this trend lately of starting each day's show with a different movie speech, like a famous speech from a film. And I've been kind of slacking on preparing these speeches, and so basically I come in every day and I have to find something on the internet that's already cleaned up. I'm seeing if this speech is online right here. No, it doesn't. It doesn't look like it is. But they're in this movie, Angus, which I say, knowing that people are going to go look for it and they're not going to be able to find it because I don't think it's out on DVD. George C. Scott has one of the best speeches about just going through hard times in your life that I've ever seen. And it's he's the grandfather, and he's talking to his grandson, who's, you know, a little too smart for his own good. He gets kicked around at school. He's fat. He doesn't have any friends. Doesn't have a girlfriend, whatever. And George C. Scott has this great speech. And the speech is that Superman isn't brave. And he says, you know, Angus, Superman isn't brave. You don't have to be brave when nothing can hurt you. When you're impervious, that doesn't take courage. It's people like you and your mother, people who can be hurt or crushed or destroyed, and yet you go out every day and you keep taking it. That's bravery. And it's just so great.
That's a great speech.
The whole speech that Superman isn't brave, it just gives me chills to think about it. It's fantastic. So if you ever come across that film, watch it just for George C. Scott. He's fantastic.
Another great one with him is Anatomy of a Murder.
Oh,
he played
yeah.
the prosecutor. You know, and he was such a dick, and you loved him.
And he was also, speaking of, God, he wasn't in... What am I thinking of? He wasn't in Failsafe. What am I thinking of that he was in that was in that same genre? But he did that, and then he was in... Here's another terrible film with a great few moments, including George C. Scott. George C. Scott is in, of all things, he is in Exorcist 3.
Yeah.
Which you would never really think would be good, but it has some really creepy moments in it, and he's fantastic. And then he has that kid, Campbell Scott, who does things now and again. But George C. Scott, man, you don't get... You know, and then, of course, he forever earned his place in the Pantheon by that kind of controversial thing he did. He wouldn't show up to get his Oscar for Patton.
Yeah.
And he sent that Indian girl to pick it up for him, some representative of some tribe to pick up his award for him.
Wasn't that Marlon Brando, or did they both do Indians? Marlon Brando did the same thing.
I don't even know. Who was it that won the Academy Award but sent a female representative of some tribe?
That was Brando for The Godfather.
Well, now, did George...
Patton, I think Patton sent somebody too, but they didn't accept it though.
Interesting.
See,
now I don't even know.
Yeah, I gotta look that one up.
All right, somebody's got to
say. I just dig George Patton, man. I just dig George C. Scott.
Okay, well, somebody will let us know. All right, well, let's talk. Going from A list all the way down to like Q list celebrity. I know this is like the last day you'll have to talk about it.
No, because she's on Larry King.
I know. Well, that's right.
To arrive anytime.
So I guess we'll talk about. Where are you at?
At the bureau.
So is she going to be doing, are you where she's going to be doing her half of Larry King
from?
Yeah,
but they're not going to live anywhere near her.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
I'm the, you know, redheaded stepchild.
That's okay, brother. You're number one in our book.
Thanks, man.
I guess we'll talk about it a little bit tomorrow. I've already set my TiVo to record it. I'm not going to pretend that I haven't. So she's going to do the Larry King thing tonight, which you know she's probably upset about. She's not getting paid, and it's on, you know, it's on a show that is not her demographic, let's say.
Larry's ratings are going to be huge tonight.
But is Larry...
Because everybody's talking about it. Every news outlet, every network is talking about Paris' first post-jail interview with Larry King.
Oh, and...
I can't believe Fox is even talking about it.
You know what? And I got to tell you, we're no better. I mean, Sarah and I know Sarah's going to watch it. I'm going to watch it. Tim's going to watch it. Larry King is so unfairly sometimes he gets rapped for throwing softball questions.
Yeah.
And sometimes he does. Sometimes he doesn't, though. Sometimes he comes out and asks the thing you really want to know.
If he doesn't care if his guest gets up and walks out, he'll throw some curves and some fastballs. But if he's afraid his guest is going to get up and walk out and he's got nobody else, he's got her for this entire hour, he's not going to try and tick her off.
It's unfortunate that you use the phrase, get up and walk out, because I was going to say... when he interviewed Christopher Reeve, he did ask... I was going to say, it's so unfortunate, because Christopher Reeve ain't going to get up and walk out of nothing. But he did. He came right out, like, the third question out of the gate, Larry King asked Christopher Reeve. And again, Larry King gets tagged for being a softball interview. But he asked Christopher Reeve, like, the third question, and he goes, can you have sex? And I remember thinking to myself, like... Whoa, you know, like, I didn't expect that, but, I mean, I guess everybody wants to know.
That's the question.
And so I'll be curious to see. So you think that because Paris is his only guest...
Because he's going to be real easy on her for at least the first half hour.
Yeah, and then once it doesn't matter, once he can fill up the rest with calls or whatever, then he'll go to the mattresses, maybe. Yeah. What do you think is the one question everybody wants to ask Paris Hilton? I mean, the one straight-up real question, if anybody, the people want to know the answer to. Is there anything we really do want to know?
I want to know why. I want to know what she thinks of all this. Does she think this is ridiculous as I think it's ridiculous, or does she love this? Does she really think she's a celebrity?
That's a fair question. But you know that she probably does, only because she's been treated as one.
But I want to know why. What have you done that gives you celebrity status?
That's an interesting question. See, I wish he would ask that. I could do a whole hour on that. The question you wish Larry King would ask Paris Hilton. What have you done to deserve being celebrity?
You know, in spite of the negative press you get, what have you done that deserves the press you get now? And
right.
Don't tell me you're famous because of A Simple Life. Don't say that.
Right.
Because I'll smack you right here. You
know,
that's you can't
Larry
be famous
King.
For that show.
I screw Larry King. I want you to win this interview.
I would say that. I'd say, hey, don't say A Simple Life because I'll smack you right here.
I will beat you.
Because it was the whatever status she got was the reason why she got A Simple Life.
Totally.
You know, so what was it that got her there?
Well,
what does she think it is?
You know, the weird thing about Paris Hilton is I remember, I have this whole, there used to be this show on television called Spitting Image, and it was on in Britain for a long time. And then they tried it in America. It didn't really work. But it was sort of this show with caricature puppets of real-life celebrities, like in the Genesis Land of Confusion video. Anyway, but they had this one great conceit, and the conceit of the show was that there was this group, this secret group called the Famous Corporation. And the Famous Corporation was a group of guys who sat in a room at a table and literally decided everything. They decided who was going to win the Super Bowl, who was going to win the Academy Awards, whether New Coke was going to come out. Who was going to be on the cover of Time magazine? Like, the gag was that they literally decided everything.
Wow.
And I have always felt like with Paris Hilton, somebody in a room somewhere flipped a switch and said, okay, now this girl will become, chink, world famous. And they just turned it on. Because one day, I had never heard of her. And then the next day, I remember exactly where I was first time I heard about Paris Hilton. First time I heard of who she was. I went to a poker game a few years ago. I went to a poker game. At a guy's house, and there was a guy named Richard Nunn he was a meteorologist here in town. I'm at this poker game, and this meteorologist guy comes in, he's reading Teen People of all things. And I'm like, dude, I know you're a pervert, but why are you reading Teen People? And he's like, you got to check out this girl. And I said, who? And he goes, this girl, Paris Hilton. And I go, I've never heard of her. And he goes, oh, she is so hot, and she's like a billionaire, and check it out, she is just the hottest thing ever. And he was so into Paris Hilton, and that was the first day I'd ever heard of her. And within like a week, she was everywhere. And somebody somewhere just pressed a button and decided to make her famous one day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. It really does.
So, all right. Well,
it could very well be a bunch of guys sitting around some boardroom somewhere.
And there must be. I mean, not to sound all conspiratorial about it, but I mean,
I wonder when it's my turn.
I think every time a celebrity dies, you move up one in line, though. So.
Yeah, but the money doesn't come.
I know.
That's what I need.
Hey, by the way, we got this. Rick, it is my understanding that it was Brando who sent the Indian woman to accept the award. Legend has it, says this email, that John Wayne had to be constrained backstage from storming back onto the stage during her speech.
Whoa.
Well, I can see that, too, because didn't she say, like, Marlon won't be here because of the way the Indians have been treated, blah, 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 blah. And that was, like, the thing, right, is he wouldn't show up until the Indians were treated
better. Well, John Wayne killed a bunch of them.
Well, that was... Well, and John Wayne was just... I mean, God, you thought... I mean, you read the bio about John Wayne, who was just a good actor in a certain niche, but just seemed like such a pinhead in so many ways. You just read about his personal life and his personal behavior. Just seemed like a...
He was just a man, that's all.
Just a...
He was just a man. You know?
Just,
give me a beard, shut up.
Totally.
He was just a man.
All right.
Say stupid things, do stupid things.
I never did get an answer on the George C. Scott thing, but I'm going to look into it. I'm going to find out the answer.
There's something about George C. Scott and the Oscars.
Yeah.
And it was for Patton, and I don't know what it is.
Hey, Bob, this guy has a really great observation, though. He says, really, for Paris Hilton and her career, Larry King is the wrong choice. She would do much better for her image if she did an interview with Charlie Rose. It would give her an air of class and sophistication and so forth. And, well, you know, the thing is, she is on a little bit of an upswing right now because of those photos that came out where she looks so normal.
Yeah.
And if she did some interview, I mean, if this interview goes well tonight, she might win over a lot of people. If she does,
she'll wind up on Oprah next.
Yeah, I mean, this is her chance. She must, her PR people must have spent the last few weeks telling her this, that, like, this is the day. Like, this week is sort of make or break if she ever wants to rise above where she is now.
She's already making a mistake, I can tell you, because there have been just, there's been a parade of makeup and hair and wardrobe people all over the place. They're, you know, she's going to look like she did before she went into jail, and I think that's going to, everybody's going to go, oh, man.
She'll have that dumb fake Mona Lisa smile on her face.
It would surprise me if she wasn't all dolled up.
We do have a question for you from a listener here. Hold on a second, see if I can do this. Let's see, this is a caller named Jim. Jim, hello, on the call.
Hi, Rick.
Hi. Well,
thanks for taking my call. Yes, Jim, I read a book called Laurel Canyon, and you were referenced in the back of that book. It was a great book, by the way. What did you contribute to that book? Were you around in the era when the Mamas and the Papas and Frank Zappa were in Laurel Canyon?
Laurel Canyon? I'm in a book called Laurel Canyon?
Yeah. You were referenced in a book. It's all about the music scene in the late 60s and 70s and that whole Laurel Canyon group.
I didn't arrive in L.A. until 1980.
So are you sure it's the same Jim Roop, sir?
You know, I'm not sure, but because of what I know about Jim just from your show, I assume that it was because it is about L.A. and he is in L.A., but it may not be the same Jim Roop.
Obviously, I've never heard of another one.
Well, who knows? Well, see now you're going to go look it up.
Get that book.
Now you're going to go find it. All right. Thank you, my friend.
So who's? I'm going to ask who the author was.
Do you know who the author is, sir?
No, but if you go to Duck Soup there across from where Tower Records used to be, I'm sure that they'll be able to tell you what book it is.
There's a little anger there about Tower Records closing down.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, when that happened, the world changed.
All right.
What's next? The whiskey?
It's time to move on with our lives, sir.
They better never get rid of the whiskey.
No, it's the whiskey will be there forever. Yeah. All right, that's a caller named Jim. Well, you know what? Now we're going so over time here. You know, I'm actually in. Somebody told me that they were reading, some woman from NPR did this kind of a cool idea for a book where she drove from one coast to another, like from L.A. to Maine or something, and she listened to talk radio the entire way, and then she wrote a book about what she learned about America. In other words, the window onto America that you got just by listening to nothing but talk radio, local talk radio, as you drove across the country, which is sort of an interesting idea for a book. Huh. It's sort of like, you know, because that is talk radio is a rather unique window on the world. And so if you listen to local talk radio from one coast to another, what is the perception you would come away with from different parts of the country? And the weird thing is, her trip through Salt Lake City coincided with the time when I was on the air there. And as she's driving through Salt Lake City, she starts talking about some idiot talk show host she heard in the afternoon. I heard some moron in the afternoon, and it's clearly me, which is the weirdest thing about it. She's like some, you know, young 20-year-old punk in Salt Lake City going on about it, and it was some topic, and it was very obviously she had been going through Salt Lake City and had heard me on the air. She didn't use my name, and she transcribes part of the show, and it was very obviously me. So that's kind of a weird thing.
Wow.
Let's do one more call. This guy, he has the George C. Scott deal. Paul, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Jim Roop. What's up?
Hey, George C. Scott just decided he didn't accept the idea of having awards for acting, so he never accepted his award for Patton, and the Academy still has possession of it.
Oh, very good.
Interesting. All right. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
There you go. So, see, you ask, and the Rick Emerson audience delivers, Jim.
There you go.
All right, my brother. Well, enjoy the rest of your day. If you get within spitting distance of Paris, spit. All right.
Let me work up a big honker for you.
I'm going to go out on that joke.
Thanks,
all right,
sir.
Enjoy your day, sir.
Bye-bye.
There you go. CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Fantastic. All right. 503-733-2970. Tim Riley, no doubt industriously working on exciting news stories to share with the people when we return. Later on, I don't know. I'll have Sarah tell me what to do, because I don't know what to do after that. I just dropped my pen.
Kind of falling apart.
I was so strong on the Paris joke. Now it's all fizzled. We'll let Mike Ness sing us to break. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
Carson Show live from Portland. 503-733-2970. Rick, pleased to be telling the technical genius that is Scotty J that hour two on 970.am doesn't work. He says the hour two segment on the 970.am feed doesn't work. It gives error 404. Pleased to be telling Scotty if he doesn't fix it, I will brand error 404 on his face. Signed, angrily,
Andy.
All right. 503-733-2970. Rick, I always assumed the grimace. I want to tell you, by the way, grimace here is spelled G-R-I-M-U-S. Grimoose. According to Grimou. That's like Camus. According to the according to the French philosopher, Grimou. Rick, I always assumed the Grimou was a thinly veiled disclaimer on the part of McDonald's lawyers. Being Ronald's best friend, he was a subtle warning that frequenting McDonald's would leave you a rotund idiot with purplish skin. As for the fry guys, I may be remembering wrong, but I seem to recall them being very similar to a specific Sesame Street alien character. I know exactly who he's talking about, too. Or maybe I'm just mixing them up with the yip-yip-yip-yip-yip-yip-yip characters. Thanks, as always, for the show. No, that's exactly who I was thinking of. They were the... Well, wait, now I don't even know. There were those aliens that would come through the wall of Bert and Ernie's apartment. And they would go, yip, 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 yip. But am I confusing them with the twiddle bugs? Somebody stop me!
You now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Portland police have arrested a cross-dressing sex offender.
Mormon police?
Portland police. Oh, okay. Did I say Mormon police?
I thought you said Mormon police.
I hope I didn't. Portland police have arrested a cross-dressing sex offender in the women's locker room of a local community center. 35-year-old Thomas Lee Benson was dressed as a woman and changing clothes in front of children twice.
Sex offender?
Over several hours.
Oh, it didn't even work. All that setup. Sex offender.
I barely knew her.
All right, I'm sorry.
At Mount Scott Community Center.
Oh.
He's listed as a predatory sex offender in the state registry. Investigators also think he may have recently gone into women's dressing rooms at other community centers. He's charged with invasion of privacy, misuse of a restroom, and failing to register as a sex offender. Well, if he failed to register, how do they have him in the sex offender book?
Well, they've just decided. So is this, when you say a community center, is this community center like there's a swimming pool and racquetball, or is this a community center
I've
like...
I've never been there. It's Mount Scott Community Center.
I mean, because there's two types of community centers. There's the, you know, like you can go play shuffleboard, and then there's the, you drool a lot and need to be wheeled everywhere.
Oh, maybe. I'm not sure.
All right.
I've never been in that part of town.
Well, avoid the guy.
Hot pants, pretty little hot pants, and retro styling took to the air in celebration of One Airline's 75th anniversary. A flight attendant sporting the looks of Alaska Airlines from days past showed off the old pillbox hats, Russian Cossack dresses, and 70s looks at a fashion show at PDX today. The employees were set to greet flyers and sport the outfits and flights through June 30th.
They really, you know, they ought to bring that look back. Putting the chicks on the airplane, the stewardesses, like in the leopard skin pillbox hat, as Bob Dylan would say, and then the cool like one piece miniskirt kind of thing or whatever that was, you know, like the laugh in sort of look. Mm-hmm. That would be really cool. They should totally do that on some airline, like a theme airline where everybody, even the male stewards, where they all do the retro look. That'd be really cool.
Well, that's what they're doing in Alaska Airlines.
Flying just sucks so much now. I mean, I used to love to travel. Well, I mean, that's the thing, and I made this complaint before, but then I realized a couple trips ago that's the result of all this stupid security is that it has now just eliminated my love of traveling. I used to really love to go to the airport and fly someplace, and now it's just a huge chore. I just dread it. So that would make it a little interesting at least.
I don't blame you at all. Attention all you kids out there. Oregon Park and Recreation wants to remind you that no fireworks may be set off at Oregon parks and beaches. They're posting reminders along the coast pointing out that fireworks, including sparklers, are prohibited in all Oregon state parks and banned on the state's ocean beaches.
Why is it... Okay, go ahead.
They do this just to be mean. Fireworks can hurt people, cause wildfires, and harm wildlife. And you could lose a finger or a hand.
Oh, who cares about losing a finger or a hand? No one cares about those people anyway.
Yes?
I'm trying to be very calm about this. There's nothing to burn at the beach. Nothing at the beach will burn. It's the ocean. There's nothing there that will burn.
There are a lot of seagull droppings.
It's sand and rocks and water. Nothing there will burn. I don't understand the problem.
I can understand if you're in a vacant lot or if you're in some weed-filled, you know, apartment complex. There's nothing at the beach to catch on fire. I mean, of all places to set up fireworks, you would think the beach would be the most logical place, wouldn't you?
I would, yes.
Seriously, what is it?
I'm not one of the authorities, though.
God damn, you know whose fault this is, Tim?
Who?
Whitey?
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, hold on a sec. Hey, Mark, I'll call you back next
time. I'll just wait. Don't worry about me.
Hey, you can play that music if you want.
No, you're already back from talking. What's Mark's problem?
Mark? Oh, you know, we're trying to sell stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. yeah, I was going to tell you about that Mount Fat center there.
Yeah.
And it's over on, like, 70th or 72nd in Southeast.
Uh-huh.
And they have a lovely lap pool. But when people aren't doing laps, they've got a rope swing, and you can jump in the deep end. Then they also have a small, like a children's play pool with a big slide, and they've got a gym.
So this is a park, basically.
It's like an indoor park, and it's actually a pretty great place. They've got a
except for the violent sex offender lurking in the bathroom.
They've got a wave room with you know, with the bicycles, and I think you can skate in the basement area.
A weight room where he waits to assault you.
Well, there's a lot of waiting for machines in there, actually.
All right. Okay. So it's not a place for the disabled.
Well, you know, they could come and I think they've got their wheelchair basketball in there sometimes.
Really? Do they?
Yeah, I think they do actually.
All right.
I think I've seen the guys in there doing that.
How can you throw a wheelchair through a basket?
Well, you have to
get two or three guys
over your head. It's upper body strength.
Wait. All right. Thank you. All right. He keeps moving around. I know that guy was trying to be informative, but
I feel informed.
Not as interesting as I thought it would be. All right.
But I know more about the Mount Scott Community Center than I did when we began.
Here's the thing. I don't even really know where Mount Scott is. Here's Tim Riley.
The Guitar Center, the largest U.S. musical instrument retailer, says they've accepted a $1.9 billion cash buyout from a private equity firm. The deal with affiliates of Bain Capital Partners, LLC, came amid speculation that a buyout was in the works. And the Guitar Center has stores all over the place. I'm not sure if they have one here or not. American Idol judge and former pop star Paula Abdul is getting ready for a reality show of her own. Hey, Paula premieres on Bravo tomorrow night. It's a 7-part series promising a real-life look into Paula's world. Highlights include footage of the 45-year-old as she battles. I'm sorry. bumps heads with QVC executives, and develops her own fragrance, and plays practical jokes on her assailants
or assistants.
Hey, Paula will also give you a chance to get to know her entourage, including her best friend and Silas Daniel, and her now former publicist Jeff, and her full-time wardrobe assistant Kylie. Hey, Paula, premieres tomorrow night at 10 Eastern Time on Bravo.
Thanks so much.
Have to figure out the time out here.
I'm still back on playing practical jokes on your assailants.
Yes.
Okay. I won't say what I was going to say. Let's move on.
Why not?
No, because it's crude. Okay. Here's Tim Riley.
An Oregon lady is suing the Recording Industry Association of America, saying she's the victim of abusive legal tactics, threats, and illegal spying. Apparently, a 44-year-old Tanya J. Anderson got herself in hot water in 2005. She's accused of violating copyright laws by illegally downloading music onto her computer. In her countersuit, Anderson claims the RIAA refused to drop its case after their own experts supported her claims of innocence. She also claims the group threatened to interrogate her 10-year-old daughter, Kylie, if she didn't pay thousands of dollars. The alleged intimidation included attempts to contact Kylie directly and contacting the girl's school asking about her attendance. The recording industry dropped its lawsuit on June 1st, and a spokesman declined to comment on the specifics of the case. The RIAA is a trade group of recording industry companies that control 90% of the music sold in the U.S. Since 2003, they've been taking aggressive legal action against individual computer users accused of illegally downloading music. They filed more than 20,000 lawsuits.
Boy, it's a tough time to be not only the RIAA, but it's a tough time to be a musician as well, because it's like if you're a musician, you have just this Hobson's choice. It really is just this terrible fork in the road of... Because everybody saw what happened to Metallica when they started bitching about Napster, and everybody just turned on them, and the audience just completely turned on Metallica. They had a stupid Lars Ulrich. He was out there shooting off his mouth about it. Everybody just perceived them as being the biggest bunch of sellout dicks. But it's got to be, it's a weird time to be a major recording artist, because if somebody asks you, because you can't come out against file sharing, because you'll look like a jerk to your fan base, but you can't come out in favor of it, because then it's like you're taking money out of your pocket. And I'm glad that I'm not a musician. I really am. I'm glad that I'm not a guy. I mean, it's hard enough trying to make your living in radio. I can't even imagine what it's like trying to be someone. You look at those guys now who are signed to bands. You know, or bands who are signed to major labels, and I feel sorry for them, because there was this golden time from about the end of the Beatle era to the beginning of Napster, where if you were in a band, there was this monopoly, this stranglehold, where people wanted your music, they had to go to the store, and they had to pay $18 for a record album. And however bad that may have been for consumers, it was good for record companies, and a lot of times it was good for bands, and those days are just over. You see these bands who are just desperately trying to... I mean, I can't even imagine how difficult it is to be in a band and to try to get money out of your record company these days. I mean, as badly as record companies treat artists... generally speaking, I mean, it's got to be like 50 times that bad now. I mean, it's just got to suck beyond words. So, I mean, we all know guys who are, you know, in bands or trying to make it in the recording industry or whatever. That just seems like you're marching right into a propeller. I can't fathom what a terrible, terrible industry that must be to work in. Let's see. This is, sir, about the recording industry. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's
up?
Yeah,
I saw this on the news last night. Now, this lady, you know, total white suburbanite, that listens to country music.
Oh, this is the woman who's suing the RIAA?
Yeah. And she got a list of the songs she was accused of pirating, and it's like gangster rap and stuff.
That always happens, too. The RIAA is so incompetent about this. It's always like some 85-year-old grandmother who's been accused of downloading, like, Back That Ass Up or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Oh, yeah. They never... I mean, leaving aside the issue of whether or not they have a case, you know, for people, you know, to stop people from downloading music, it's just they always pick exactly the wrong examples. It's always like a 90-year-old guy and his 5-year-old granddaughter who are living in a housing project somewhere with no electricity, you know, and then the RIA tries to hit him for $30,000.
This is a woman who's out of work on disability.
Yeah.
And, you know, listens to country music.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah, have fun getting money out of her.
Yeah, really.
All right.
Thank
you.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, every summer, a song emerges that becomes a definition of that summer. Sunshiny months for seasons afterwards. Donna Summer's Bad Girls, Alice Cooper's School's Out, Usher's Yeah, Beyonce's Crazy in Love, and unfortunately, the Macarena. But not all songs released in the summertime can be the next sexy back. The Justin Timberlake jam that had clubs rocking last summer, or I Get Around, the Beach Boys' 1964 cruising hit, or even the itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini that nobody in this audience would remember. That raises a song to a new level of summer classic. And while the blockbuster summer songs have been buried as the artists who perform them, they all share the same common thread. They make you feel good. So once again, we're searching for the secret summer sauce and trying to figure out...
Secret summer sauce.
Yeah.
The sex offender searching for that. I'm sorry. That was like sex offender and a song in the McDonald's thing we've been talking about, all merging into one there. So where is this article from?
This is from Yahoo.
Yahoo. From eBay. Yeah. The secret, so this is, so now I'm saying secret summer sauce. The hit song of the summer.
Well, because so far it could be Summer Love, a Justin Timberlake tune, rising in the charts this summer.
I realize now as you start to read these that I am so old I won't know any of them.
Well, for now, we can stand under Rihanna's umbrella.
I don't know this song either. Rihanna?
Rihanna.
Rihanna. Is that a
person? Some chick. I believe so.
Is
yeah.
Rihanna an artist, Sarah?
Yeah, she's the girl on Jay-Z's record label who makes Beyonce very nervous.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is she all that?
Yeah, because she's young.
Is
she
a girl?
Are they married, Jay-Z and Beyonce?
No.
I thought they secretly got married.
No, I guess they're going to get married.
Wasn't there some video?
I have no idea.
Was there some video of him, like, punching her in the face? I'm not saying there was.
No, there was a video of him punching some other chick in the face, not her. Like, some fan that was trying to get up.
He only punches certain girls.
Yeah, come up and talk to him. And he didn't punch her, but he grabs her face and shoves her away.
Jay-Z did?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
kinda messed up.
Well, this Rihanna young lady was born in Barbados. She has a number one smash with the rock tinge jam Umbrella.
You know, I bet we could go through the top 10 songs in the country right now, and I don't think I'd know a single one. I know that I'm old and I'm out of touch, but every so often it is brought into stark relief. And please don't take this the wrong way, Sarah, but I say this. You yourself commented how you are out of touch with a lot of today's new music, and how sad that you are the closest thing we have to an emissary to the young people.
I do.
And even you are out of touch.
I am, and all my friends love Justin Timberlake. I got into a huge argument with a couple of people. Well, not huge, but yesterday about Justin Timberlake. I don't see what's so great about him. He annoys me, and I don't like any of his music.
I do believe that there is. I believe.
I liked NSYNC.
You'll find this hard to believe. I know this is a staggering statement, but I do believe that Justin Timberlake benefits from being a white man. Now, I know that that's stunning in this country. I know that being white is usually such a handicap to people. But I believe, like Stevie Ray Vaughan before him, I do believe that Justin Timberlake... Nothing wrong with Justin Timberlake. I think he is...
They told him not to shave to give him some street cred. The only time he's ever out in the street is to get into his limousine from the backstage door.
And has those real tough-looking tribal tattoos around his calves.
Seriously, yeah, totally. As he's getting into his stretch SUV and going home to Brentwood. But Justin Timberlake is one of those guys who, my assessment, nothing wrong with his songs are perfectly acceptable, I guess. They're decent songs.
Anybody could be doing them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the thing is, they're not great, they're not terrible. He's not even in them most of the time. He certainly doesn't write them. He makes guest appearances on his own music. I mean, it really ought to be like, you know, some crap that Timbaland made featuring Justin Timberlake every so often.
I do like the song by that girl that someone tried to send her to rehab and she said, no, no, no.
Amy Winehouse, I love that song.
I like that song.
Now, do the kids like her, or is she like a Norah Jones type, or she's for old people?
No, she's totally bonkers. She's totally covered in tattoos, and she's the one, she's tall, she wears like the beehive hairdo, big cat eye glasses.
Is she the one with the album that sounds just like it's from the 60s?
Yep, the one that you're always talking
about. That's a swell tune.
I confuse her with... It's the weirdest conversation. The three of us are like blind men in a room trying to read a Braille map. Talk about modern music.
I do watch part of the VH1 Countdown.
I have to start watching more Countdown shows so that I can stay literate with these sort of things. Okay, so who do I always confuse Amy Winehouse with?
Lily Allen. We've had this conversation.
I know, because I can never tell them apart. So Amy, but they're both British, right?
Yeah.
And Amy Winehouse was in rehab and she's nutty and sounds like a 60s girl. Lily Allen is like a reggae type thing, right?
Yeah, Lily Allen's, well, she's more
like electronic, like a Regina Spektor kind of thing almost.
Yeah, I think this is it.
So it's going to be clean?
Yeah.
Okay, is this Lily Allen?
This is Amy Winehouse.
I like Amy Winehouse. They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no.
Yes, I've been back, but when I come back, no, no, no. All right. Have you never heard this?
No. Is this a black woman?
Nope.
No, you lie.
Thin white girl. Look. Yep. It's nuts when you see her. Yeah, and she's tall and it's covered in tattoos, has a huge black beehive hairdo.
She's just a lot of hair and two legs.
And she's notorious for having to cancel shows because she
Can you back that ass up? Can you back this song up?
Yeah.
For a second.
It's hip bound this week.
Seriously. First of all, how much does this sound like a 60s song?
It does. That's why I like it.
It sounds like it's straight out of the Spectre era. These are like, what's it, the Chanterelles,
yeah,
or whatever, and that thing you do. And, I mean, she sounds unbelievably black on this song, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would never have guessed it was some skinny white girl.
Do we play it again?
Oh, yeah, no. So... Okay, that's just creepy.
Uh-huh. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. And she just got married to her... boyfriend that she breaks up with, like, on and off.
They have a tempestuous...
...finch each other and stuff. Like, one of those... They're like another Kate Moss and Jungle Doherty love. Kind of couple.
Okay, that's just weird.
It's swinging.
It is, though. It's a great song. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's I'm weirded out because, A, she doesn't sound like a skinny white girl. And, B... It sounds like, you know what this sounds like? There was a record that came out a couple years ago where some of the big hit producers of today, like Timbaland and Dan the Automator, remixed a bunch of old Motown songs. So it was like actual old, like Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Temptation stuff, remixed by the Neptunes. That's what this sounds like. This sounds like some old Motown song remixed by a modern day producer. Is she hot? She sounds hot.
She's... In some pictures, yes.
I don't even care if she's physically attractive. She's hot just because of this song and this voice.
She's one of the most interesting-looking people I've ever seen.
Oh, I see.
No, she's
like my
pretty.
Cousin with the odd eye that always rolls off to the side.
No, she's pretty in a very strange way. I mean, who walks around these days, you know, with a giant black beehive on
her? Now, is this a contrived look? In other words, is this something where a producer got a hold of her and said, here's your gimmick, you're going to sound like one of the Supremes? Do you think? Or is this like the way
no,
she really
I know
is
that
it her?
She writes her own music and songs, so I think this is her.
Now let's get some calls about Amy Winehouse. I find conversations like this fascinating because I'm such a huge music fan, but I'm always just so out of touch with crap. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show about Amy Winehouse. Hello.
Hey, Rick, this is Jesse from Red Hot Pistol.
What's up?
Hey, Amy Winehouse pisses me off.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm a, you know, functional alcoholic and proud of it, and I think she plays up the fact that she's a drunkard too much, you know? Like, she's a little too much pandering to us, to the people who like to drink
people
alcohol.
Who really are alcoholics. People for whom it's a lifestyle.
That's what I'm saying. You're not going to sell me records because you like scotch.
I like you're all pissed off about it, too. All right, thank you, sir.
So, whatever. The other thing is, that's not the latest song she has out, but if you listen to the song she has, they're almost exact rip-offs of other songs. The latest one sounds like a Tom Waits tune.
Really?
I can't remember which one it is, but the chorus of the song you were just playing sounds like the chorus of Little Tenderness from Otis Redding. The same
melody
and everything.
Yeah.
So she's just ripping off that kind of stuff, putting some booze references in it, and expecting me to pay $18 for it.
Well, if kids today haven't heard it, it's new to them, sir.
That's right.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I like he's all offended that she plays out the alcoholism. He just does it, just for fun. How dare she make money off something that I just do as an amateur? Malcolm, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Yeah, hey, Rick.
Hey,
how you doing?
What's up, brother?
I was noticing a Amy Winehouse. She sounds like Shirley Bassey.
I can see that.
Goldfinger fame.
I can totally see that. Yeah, well observed, sir. All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Hey, Scotty, will you come in the studio, please?
Thanks to Scotty, because I've had that in my inbox for a while.
Really?
I love that song. He loves that song, too.
It's a cool song. I dig it.
I can't believe you haven't heard
it. I dig it.
It's been out for months. I really can't believe you haven't heard it.
You know what? I am so out of touch. I'm so out of touch. So it just takes me forever to pick up on things. Hey, Scotty, Jay, how are you?
Doing great, Rick.
See, Scotty, the song.
All right.
Aren't you excited?
Finally got it out.
Yes. Mark from the Bullet Boys?
Yes, Mark Torian.
Okay, now I can do that now. Is it going to be better for him? Can he, if we do it at the bottom of the hour, is that going to work out as well? I want to make sure we have adequate time. Can you talk to him and see if he has
absolutely
he can do it now, or if he can
sure
at the bottom of the hour?
And I'll let you know.
I want to make sure we have adequate time to talk to him. He doesn't get cut off.
Okay, cool.
So if you can check on that right now, I would appreciate it. In the meantime, let's get Josh. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up?
Hey, I just discovered Amy Winehouse this weekend, too, and I just wanted to call in because my girlfriend works at a record store, and she says the first Amy Winehouse question that she constantly has to ask, and constantly says, no, she's not black. And
well, it seems like if that happens about every 10 years in this country, there'll be some musical act that comes out, and it's that whole conversation of, like, really? Seriously? They're white? Come on, you know? Kind of like that whole thing about Stone Temple Pilots when it was like a lot of like, really? It's not Eddie Vedder? Come on, you know?
I do. And, hey, if I can get one last thing, it was funny. I just discovered her myself and showing her to coworkers this morning, and they were digging on it just like you and Tim and everything. We were just getting a discussion how sad it is that they get Lily Allen, they get Amy Winehouse, and we get like Britney Spears and Paris Hilton.
Yeah. You know, the Brits did create whole segments of rock, though, so what are you going to do?
I guess so.
All right. That's what they get, you know? All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Doug, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Sally, go around the roses. It's a song from the 60s called Sally, Go Around the Roses.
So
we totally ripped it off.
Hold on. Now, is it a cover or is it?
What Ringo Starr did or George Harrison did with My Sweet Lord.
Well, there are two things. There's a sample, which is using part of an old song where you literally use part of the recording and you work it into the new material. There is a cover, and then there's what's called an interpolation or a derivation, which is where you just use a pre-existing melody and you work it into a new composition.
Exactly. She took a melody from an old 60s song, and it called it, I think it was called Sally Go Round the Roses or Sally Run Round the Roses.
Right, okay.
And I'm sure the songwriter's probably dead, so he can't sue. Have you seen pictures of her? I mean, she looks fake.
Well, somebody said, I have an email here. Many people have said that she looks, how do we call it? She looks dirty girl hot.
Yeah.
She's hot, but looks like a bad girl.
But it looks like she totally manufactured that look, you know?
I'm looking at some photographs right here, and I always, with artists like this, I always do wonder to what extent somebody in a room somewhere has sort of decided that her whole thing is like, you're going to be the edgy one. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I'm sure that, you know, 6 months or a year ago, she had a completely different look and wasn't even thinking of, like, whatever her, you know, her persona is.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's just what I get from looking at her. Great to see you, Rick.
All right, thank you, sir.
As always, have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.
All right, so here's that song he's talking about.
It's funny, we were just talking about the music and how out of touch I am. And this is actually a conversation I was putting off until later. But let me see if I have this. Let's see if I have this song here. Speaking about how I'm, because I don't know what the top 10 in the country is right now. I don't have access. I don't have Billboard.com or anything up open. But let's see. This is again a song that I guess has been out for a while that I just heard recently. Let's see, where the hell did I put this? Ba 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 ba. I have no idea. Hold on a second. I know this.
What are you looking for?
This is gripping. I'm looking for that new that Avril Lavigne song.
I love that song. Damn Kiki.
And I just had it. It was just that feeling. It was just here. You know where I put it? It's in that folder with the song Stolen from other songs. Hold on a second. Stolen. Top 5 Stolen. All right. So this is, I say, crossing my fingers that it's clean. I think Scotty cleaned this for me. This is the new Avril Lavigne single. I know there's a remix of it. This is the original. This is
the remix is terrible.
Let me just say this about this song. I hated this song the first time I heard it until I got about halfway through it. Because the whole song is about how she's stealing some other girl's guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing about, he ain't the right man for you, I'm going to steal, you know, the right girl for you, I'm going to steal you. And so she's talking to some guy who has a girlfriend, and her whole thing is like, that girl's dumb, and she's a skank,
mm-hmm.
and so dump her and date me instead, because that girl's, you know, because she's nothing. And so the whole song is like dissing on this guy's girlfriend, saying, like, you should be with me because I'm so much better. And about halfway through the song, she kind of won me over because it's just such brazen, it's just such balls. It's just so obnoxious that she kind of wins me over. There's kind of a cool brazenness about it that I like.
We listen to this hundreds of times in New Orleans.
Seriously, she's a real Tuesday. There's no words for this. Anyway, so the whole song is her putting down this guy's girlfriend. And then she does. You want to talk about a song stolen? Let's see. I think it's going up here. Okay, where is it? this stole it from.
I can't think because of this song, you know.
You okay? Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
Okay. Here's where that's clearly stolen from.
Oh, totally.
It's totally stolen from this. See if we can. Am I missed the right here? I mean, it's not like the notes. Clearly, the feel of that Avril Lavigne song is taken from this. This is still a great song. This sounds like an Elvis Costello song. I know I always say that, but it sounds like an Elvis Costello song. It's that keyboard, that organ in the background. All right, there you go. All right. Well, I was going to do, let's see. So what do we got here? Okay, yeah, so Mark... Mark Turian from the Bullet Boys is going to join us at 2:30. So we'll do that here in just a little while. Did Tim take that story with him? I just want to make sure that we're not... I want to make sure that we're... let's see, hold on. I think he took it with him. All right.
You know that we're like 40 minutes late for our break,
right? I know. But I know that we got... It's got to be coming because he's got like 2-3 minutes before we can break here. By the way, you're listening to KCMD Portland. Let's see. How about this? Oh, really? Okay, so somebody just sent me an email here. Did you hear that? Okay, now, do you know the rumor about this Avril Lavigne song?
No.
Okay, the rumor, I say, spreading it along. Continuing to pass this rumor along without any basis or grounds. Let's see. This is, says, Rick, in case you haven't heard this, that Avril Lavigne song is allegedly about another woman's girlfriend. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. So there you go. I'm simply passing that along. I don't really know that that's true. And a lot of people are saying that version of that song we play, that Jeanette song, apparently their version sounds a lot closer to the Amy Winehouse version than that cover that we played. So, all right. Let's do, okay, well, before we do anything else, let's do this.
Scotty J.
Get this out of the way. And then we'll take a break, come back, Tim Riley. And Mark Turian from the Bullet Boys are going to join us here, and we'll all be getting all this stuff in this hour.
Well, hello, Scotty.
Scotty J, Intrepid PA. Hello, Scotty.
How's it going?
All right, so we got the Mark Turian from the Bullet Boys at 2:30.
Yes.
All right, and it is Turian or Turian?
Turian.
It's one of those things that you realize I've read it a million times, but I've never said it out loud. Turian. All right, so we're going to talk to him. I wanted to make sure he didn't cut off here. So that's at 2:30.
2:30.
Right. Hey, so we were talking about this the other day, and I wanted to get this taken care of because I've been getting some nagging emails about this. I'll file this other thing under stuff we got to do later at some point. So somebody called the other day, and they were talking about you as the new F. Matt Peterson. Now, that is before your time. You didn't.
Yeah, I don't understand anything about it, what it means.
You know, this makes me feel old. This makes me feel really old. The fact that Scotty has no idea who Matt Peterson is, doesn't know anything about Matt
Peterson.
Have
you met Matt before?
Have you ever met Matt Peterson?
Yes, but I had listened to your show back in the Steve days when he had the big truck.
The Steve days.
Oh, Steve Pelequin.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a long time ago.
But it was very, you know, just a few weeks back then because I was on the road a lot. So
that's like three versions of the show back.
Steve right.
Pelequin.
And
I don't know if I told you this,
but I showed up out there at Le Center for a party you were going to have out there.
Oh, was this for the unpleasant
and
party?
And I decided, rather than wait in line to get into a show that I really didn't know at the time, I wish I did, but I didn't know the show at the time. And so I went next door and gambled all night.
Fantastic. Steve Pelequin, I forgot all about that. Steve Pelequin, Mr. I'm going to be taking a lot of strippers out to lunch on the company account.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do to promote the station, right?
He wasn't promoting the station. He was promoting.
He's taking out strippers.
Yeah, he was promoting getting some strippers to come back to his house, I think. So,
awesome.
Anyway, all right. So, but here's the deal. Matt Peterson, we had this catchphrase for a long time in the show, which was F. Matt. And his name kind of became F. Matt Peterson. And it was because we were talking about one day about whatever our first car was or what was the first car you drove. And he revealed that his first car when he was 16 was a BMW that his parents purchased for him.
Wow.
And the audience immediately turned on him, just like rabid weasels. And so somebody called the other day. I think you might have actually been in here. And they said, hey, Scotty J is the new F. Matt Peterson. Let's find out what his first car was. So don't reveal it yet.
Okay.
Don't reveal it yet. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a brief Insta-poll. We'll do an Insta-poll here of the Rick Emerson audience, and then we'll find out the answer. So we'll just take these calls on screen. So please now to be calling 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And we're going to canvass the audience as to what they think Scotty J's first car was, and then we'll reveal the truth. Now, I don't know the answer. I don't know. Sarah doesn't know. I don't think anybody in this room knows what your first car was, so don't say it yet. We're going to canvass the audience. We'll get the people to vote on what they think your first car was, or just get their guesses on it, and then we'll figure it out. Because it is, ever since that guy asked the question, every day I've gotten an inordinate number of emails from people who want to know the answer. It's been kind of nagging at them. So it's 503-733-2970 with your guesses as to what Scotty J's first car was.
And are we going to guess?
Yeah, we'll guess here in a second, and then we'll talk about something else. We're getting the call to come in. So before we even guess at it, though, let me just say this. You have made no secret of the fact that you're putting your house up for sale because you're moving into a new one.
Right.
And so have you already bought the new house?
No, it's contingent upon selling the
But I mean, have
current.
You put down earnest money or whatever
yes.
you call it? Okay, so.
And you get that back if you don't
so
sell.
So you've got to unload right. the house you've got now. So Sarah and I walk into the studio or to Scotty's room just a few minutes ago during a break. And by the way, Sarah and I have never felt so immature in our lives because there's you and Tim Riley talking about home ownership. And Tim's talking about, well, have you blah, 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 you know.
They're taking virtual tours of each other's homes.
He's a slumlord. He owns a lot of properties.
And you're using property terms that Sarah and I don't understand. I'm 34. I've never owned anything.
Yeah, that's when I realized that there's something wrong with us.
Totally.
There is something wrong with us. We're renters.
You and Tim, yeah, there are renters in this world and they're buyers. You and Tim are the grown-up half of the show. Sarah and I are not. But you have set up, and I won't give the website up, but there's a website people can go to and take a virtual tour of your home.
And that's the first time I
the
saw
home you
either.
Live in now.
Right.
Let me just tell you this. You live in the biggest goddamn home I have ever seen. It's massive.
Oh, you've been in big homes before, haven't
I've
you?
Been in one house that's bigger, and it's the guy who owns Courtesy Ford. I played poker at his house one time, and that's a massive house.
It's probably a mansion.
Your house is huge. I mean, your house is huge, and obviously a lot of money went into that house.
And it's, like, well-decorated. All the floors and the sinks and everything looks super
Let me
expensive.
Tell you, I did that to it.
See, but why
because
did you move
I didn't
it?
Buy it like that,
I know, but
sure.
I mean, I'm not saying that you can't make a little money selling the house.
That's
I'm saying,
what I'm hoping.
Why do you not want to live in that house anymore? Please tell me it's because it's too small
actually,
for you.
Well, I'm sorry,
oh,
but...
Oh, F you. F you. It's too small. House is like the size of an
now,
aircraft
Rick,
carrier.
I have a dog, okay? I have fish and I have kids. All right,
so... Yeah, the fish
a little bit,
a lot
the
of
fish
room.
Really pushed it over the limit.
Damn fish.
You have like... The house is bigger than the house of any... I don't know anybody else that has a house that big. That house is massive. You've
and I feel fortunate.
It.
I do feel fortunate about it because I bought it at the right time, and hopefully I'm selling at the right time. We're getting to the buyer's market era of this whole run, so I don't know if I'm going to do well or not on it, but that's
well,
the whole idea. I'm going to step up and do it again.
I understand
up.
That you don't want to maybe give out the address of where you live, but at some point, if you can like capture or download or whatever just those photographs, we'll stick them on the website so people without like being able to come by and bother your crap, people could just see the house I'm talking about. Just see some of the shots I'm referring to.
Maybe they want to live there.
That's up to you. You want to give out the address, that's
no,
fine.
No, I don't.
I'm just saying, if you want to give me some of those photographs, we'll put them up so people can see the house I'm talking about. This house that you have outgrown, that you and your fish can now no longer possibly live in. All right, whatever. You know, my entire house could fit inside your kitchen, so.
I could not believe how big your house was.
It's massive, so. Just revolting. All right. We're going to go to the phones here. We'll see. We'll get the people's guesses about what your first car was. And then Sarah and I are going to do ours, too. Sarah, what is your, Sarah, madam, as the case may be, what is your guess about Scotty J's first car? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry, Rick.
That's okay.
I didn't know it was me.
What's up?
I'm thinking El Camino or an IROC Z or
El
something
Camino.
Like that.
Totally. I can see the IROC, and I can totally see the El Camino with the Western scene across the back window.
Oh, yeah.
Western.
Thank you. All right. Sarah, do you have an option? I guess about Sarah. About
I was just
going to
guess some kind of Volvo.
Yeah, but see, that's before Well, I don't know, because this would have been 24 years
that's
ago.
That's something so it would have been 83,
yeah.
So he would have been driving a car in 83.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with that.
Okay, so Sarah gets a phone call. All right. 83, your first car. I don't think it's like an LTD.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. What do you suppose Scotty's first car was?
Scotty seems like more of a truck guy to me. I bet you it was a mid-60s GM truck, or he's kind of a, you know, I bet you his first, it might have been a truck, but it might have been real lame, so it was like a Subaru Brat or something.
A Subaru Brat. Boy, those are the ugliest cars. Those Subaru Brats. Subaru makes some fine cars. They made that WRX, which I've actually driven, which is really nice. But that Subaru Brat is one of the ugliest things I've ever seen in my life.
And the Brat was camouflaged completely.
And it said Brat in like that real stylized, stupid lettering. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
All
right.
My dad thought about getting a Subaru Brat at one point.
Didn't it have two seats in the back bed that you could sit in?
I mean, it is...
What was the point of that? Going to the beach or something?
It's,
I don't
it's
know.
Real big with...
Yeah.
It's big with dog walkers. That's the no seriously those the only people
very
I've
spacious inside
the only dog walkers the only people I've ever seen driving Subaru Brats there are
or perhaps Subarus in general
or Subarus in general many women who frequent pet stores women who own many dogs
well you must go to a pet store and see a bunch of Subarus pull up and that's what you think
seriously
of, right?
Dude you park outside you start park outside like a Petco and it's nothing but pickup trucks
and Subarus
and women. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What do you suppose Scotty's first car was?
Well, I like the idea of him rolling around in a Brat, but I think I'm going to go with like a 72 Pontiac Bonneville or something, just old and huge.
Bonneville. A Bonneville is the very definition of a boat. That is a freaking boat.
I still do today. I love boats.
Bonneville, can I just tell you this? I was on the road the other day, and I saw a Bonneville that was actually, it was a real recent model, and it actually wasn't too bad, like relatively speaking. And I had to, because Bonneville for a while was my gold standard. That was when I wanted to talk about a big, ugly boat of a car, I would say Bonneville. All right, thank you, sir.
Well, that's
thank
just
you.
Like the Cadillac. You know, somewhere in the 70s, those huge, you know, Texan Cadillacs.
I'm going to revise my guess, by the way, to Monte Carlo. I'm going to say a Monte Carlo. That's my final answer. We'll do three more, and then we'll find out the answer.
Reveal.
Hello, what do you suppose Scotty's first car was?
I'm going to go against the grain and go small here. I'm going to say he drove an old Volkswagen Thing that was black and had huge white walls on it.
Volkswagen Things are cool looking.
I can't even picture that.
No, they're like a Volkswagen Bug if it had no rounded edges, if it was all flat panels. They look like a sort of Nazi version of a Volkswagen Bug.
Like Mel Gibson drove around in that movie?
No, kind of a truck.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, they're very cool. No,
Volkswagen Bugs are all... Yeah, you're looking at it?
Yeah.
It's like a Bug, but they're all flat panels.
I've always wondered what those were.
Yeah, it's a Volkswagen Thing. They're really cool.
All right, Scotty, that's it.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those before.
Yeah, I mean, they're cool-looking cars. And I don't think there's that many of them around. But I think the cool thing about Things is... A lot of those parts just snap off. Like the door will snap off. If you want to take it down, the windshield will snap off. They're all interchangeable. They're like Lego cars.
Those are South American cars, basically.
They're cool looking. I mean, it looks very German. It's a very German looking car. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. What do you suppose Scotty's first car was?
Hello, me?
Hi, yes, sir.
Oh, hey, I'm thinking like a 1987 Mazda RX-7.
RX-7. I could totally see Scotty in an RX-7.
Those were sweet cars.
Good 87, though. Yeah, it couldn't be 87. That's too late for him. It would have been something in 83.
There we go.
I don't know when they started making the RX-7, though. RX-7 is one of the definitive trashy 80s cars.
In the 80s.
Really? In the early 80s?
I think
so. It's got to have the raised white lettering on the tires, too.
I love that, too. That's so funny.
Thank you. How about a Nissan Pulsar with a T-top? It amazes me how much I know about cars in this conversation. I don't even know what's wrong with me.
They should go on the Miles Around
Show.
Yeah,
I should really do that. All right. We got a break. When we come back, we'll reveal what Scotty J's first car was, plus Tim Riley and Mark Torian of the Bullet Boys. Stay there. Rick Emerson Show after this continues after this with Mark Torian of the Bullet Boys, Scotty J's car revealed, and Tim Riley. Don't go anywhere.
Teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
to know what she... Is it...
It's her milkshake.
Was this played on the radio?
All the time.
And now there's a milk commercial about it where a guy's actually rubbing a cow's udder to this song.
Is it...
It's ice cream or something like that.
Let me ask you this. Is she talking about the... Her womanly curves? Her...
Wait, I can see her on it. You want me to teach the technique that freaks these boys? It just can't be bought. Just know thieves get caught. Watch it for sure.
Is she talking about her bosoms?
I think you know what she's talking about.
I don't. I don't. You're bluffing.
Don't play coy with
You're
me.
You're totally bluffing.
Here's the deal. I do not know what her milkshake is. I still do not know.
I think it's a technique.
I know we're talking about a song that's like 3 years old, but it's a technique?
Mm-hmm.
A technique? You mean, what kind of technique? Like a dance?
How to make milkshake.
What kind? Okay.
She works for the Tasty Freeze.
No, see, that doesn't... See, her thing was funny. Yours just doesn't make any sense. Take some of these calls. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Scotty's first car was his grandma's 72 Buick Regal.
That's an oddly specific guess. Well,
and also the reference to Fear the Black Hat, it was two of the coolest names for any rappers ever, was Tasty Taste and Tone Deaf.
Yeah, no, that's a great movie. Rusty Kundiev did that. I saw that in Portland, actually, visiting my sister years ago. But you should, it's on DVD. You should check it out.
Yep, with the they got the prosthetic booty in the video with the beer tap out coming out.
Totally,
of it.
Awesome. The booty juice. The booty is like society. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you. See you.
All right, there you go. All right, Scotty, do you want to reveal to the people your first car?
I think we actually had a guess or two left, and I told them I'd let them guess.
Oh, I see. All right. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Do you have a guess as to what Scotty J's first car was, sir?
If it's anything but a 74 Datsun hatchback, I'm going to be very disappointed.
All right, well, I guess we'll find us a Datsun. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And final guess. Hi, do you have any guesses to what Scotty J's first automobile was?
Yeah, I'm going to guess it was the same car I first had, which was a 67 Mustang.
No, there was no way there was anything that cool. No. Maybe a Mustang 2.
Oh, one other thing.
Yeah.
For Scotty J, on email and kids. A little more discretion, a little less moon vest.
Oh, that is genius. That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
I now bow.
Ah, that's great. And you're out. A little more discretion, a little less moon vest. You know,
right,
I don't
stuff.
Think. No, that's so great. I'm gonna steal that and use like a little more redstone, a little less moon vest. That's genius. All right,
Scotty J.
Hold on, let me find a drum roll. Oh, that's not it. All right.
Before I reveal it, my granny had a 66 Mustang. My brother got it.
Uh-huh.
Number two, I learned and got my driver's license with a 79 LTD.
So I said LTD.
A big red one.
My first guess was an LTD. Son
white,
of a bitch.
With white vinyl top.
God damn you.
Okay, then there was another guess that you changed to. What was your, the Monte Carlo?
I said LTD and then I changed to Monte Carlo.
Right.
What was the first car you owned?
My second car was a 79 Monte Carlo.
Ah!
And my very first car that I owned, I think, was a 72.
You think? You know.
I don't remember the year. It's 72 or 74 Datsun B210.
A B210.
It actually had a trunk, not a hatchback.
Dude! You know who drove
the best car I ever had.
You know who drove a Datsun B210? Was Biggie Smalls early in his career when he didn't have any much money? You know, and he was just living with his mom and whatever? He's big, notorious B.I.G. There are photos, I think, of him like cramming his big ass into a Datsun B210. Just a big, and he's a large man. Just the hugest guy. And there's photos of him like, hello. And just jelly.
I gotta tell you about this, though. The headliner and all the seats and everything were this vinyl, and the car always smelled brand new. I don't know why. Due to the sun or whatever. It was a 5-speed. It was a great car.
With the little honeycomb hubcaps.
Yeah,
yeah.
It kind of looked like that.
Yeah, beautiful. A Monte Carlo and an LTD, you son of a bitch. I was so close with that. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's make way for, at the Ministry of Truth, the Reverend Tim Riley.
Now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Two bodies found in the lab at the lake Oswego have been identified. One is 53-year-old Michael Kennedy. He was a chiropractor, missing since last week. And then the other was a fisherman, 51-year-old Rick Ellis, involved in a boating mishap in Thanksgiving of 2006. A biopic about Hugh Hefner has been confirmed for production after he gave his final approval. It is to be directed by Brett Ratner, who filmed the last installment of the X-Men series. Ratner hailed Hefner as the godfather of the sexual revolution and made his first visit to the Playboy Mansion to confirm the deal.
Now, there's a couple of interesting things about this. One, Brett Ratner, who was on Entourage a few episodes back, and where he was just doing nothing but photographing a lot of playmates. That totally is interesting, because that's a little call forward then. They were tipping the hat even then, that he was going to be doing that. Secondly, I'm amazed it's taken this long for there to be a Hefner official. There's a documentary that came out called Once Upon a Time about 10 years ago, narrated by James Coburn, I think, but it's not very good because it's made by Playboy and it's very heavily slanted. And they gloss, and it ends with him getting married to Kimberly Conrad. And so it's like, Hugh Hefner, devoted family man, married, never to be divorced again. One woman for the rest of his life. You know, and it was like a year after it came out that he dumped her and went back to partying in the mansion. It does puzzle me that there has never been an official Hugh Hefner autobiography. I mean, you talk about a guy who's a massive slice of American culture. I mean, maybe it'll come after he's dead. Maybe that's a thing where he doesn't want to come out while he's alive. But I do wonder why there has never been a Hugh Hefner biography, like the official, you know, biography of that guy. So, all right.
He broke all the taboos, especially in sexuality. I want to show it all, from his first orgy to the stroke that almost killed him in the 1980s.
From his first orgy. I can't wait.
Ew.
Okay. Oh, wait, hold on. We've got something here. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim. Go ahead. Just move. We'll just do it.
And Troutdale police have arrested a man accused of peeking in the showers at a truck stop. Enrique Aguirre-Montillo was arrested after several patrons said that they heard a noise after the truck driver's showers while they were bathing.
Ooh.
What?
Who wants to spy on the guys who shower at a truck stop?
One person reportedly opened the door halfway only to find the man on a ladder peeking at the truck drivers taking a shower.
I mean, have you ever been to one of those truck stops? And I do find them kind of fascinating. One of those truck stops, though, where they have, like, showers and... Like,
look, you found it fascinating.
I mean, it is an interesting part of the culture that there are these... And I'm not talking about just, he's an unpleasant-looking man.
I would like to see that.
You know what he looks like? He looks like Bill Paxton at the end of Weird Science. He gets turned into the little pod creature. He gets turned into the little brown pile of goo. That's what that guy looks like. Chet at the end of Weird Science. No, there's a regular truck stop where you stop in, you gas up, you grab some food, whatever. And then there's those truck stops where they have, like, little showers and, like, beds by the hour and whatever. And it's just a whole weird... It's a whole weird, like, alternate sort of universe that truck drivers live in, you know, where there's all of these places that you don't ever really see if you're just some guy driving the family to Disneyland.
So this truck dump facility is probably the Waldorf of truck stops.
It really is. It's the most upscale. Hi, Pat, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
You might want to double-check this with Davey Nipples, but apparently Anthony Kiedis' father is going to move in to Northeast Portland, a house in Northeast Portland right across the street from my brother.
Anthony Kiedis from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That's correct.
So so Anthony Kiedis' dad is moving to Northeast Portland?
Well, the story was this house went off the market.
Where did you hear this?
Well, my brother, his wife, they live across the street from this house that's for sale right now. It's like a 5,000 square foot new house infill mansion. And
Northeast Portland mansion.
There was an old house there that they demoed, and then they broke the lot into two lots, and then they built two ridiculously huge houses for Californians or whatever. But so the house went off the market, but some neighbors had seen Anthony Kiedis there. Apparently he's dating a woman who's pregnant, and she's from Portland. So they were thinking that maybe Anthony Kiedis was going to move into the house. But it turns out that he actually bought the house for his father.
Well, we'll have to look into it. We'll check with our sources, sir.
Okay. I think Davey Nipples might be a source, because they used to tour with him way back when.
All right. Well, we'll look into it.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Later.
All right, there you go. There's a whole lot of those, like, stories about people who live in Portland but who don't really make a big deal of it, or it's not really known. Like, I won't say who it is, but there's...
Donald Trump.
Yes. Salman Rushdie. Sarah and I were talking about a musician, a lead singer, not too long ago, a few weeks ago, who is moving here. At the end of the tour, is going to be moving to Portland.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh. Sorry, that took a second.
Yeah,
because Tony Bennett.
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's going to be weird if you just bump into someone in your neighborhood. Like,
hello, aren't you the guy?
World famous.
Yeah. Oh, is this Mark? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you, Tim Riley, greatest newsman on earth.
Always my pleasure.
Be back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour, all the way to Lycus, giving you news throughout the day. Yes. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Bulla Boys, who are going to be at Outlaws tonight. Show starts at 8, or the doors open at 8 p.m., show to follow. Bulla Boys headlining along with Brittany Fox, Enough's Enough, and Pale Rider, Mark Torian for the Bulla Boys. Hello, how you doing, Mark?
Hi, how are you, Eric? Good to hear from you.
I am dandy, my friend. Hey, we saw you guys the last time you rolled through town, and it was you guys were fantastic and unbelievably loud.
So
it was so loud that, like, I could feel my ribs. It was Motorhead loud. I could feel my ribs caving in.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know, we're kind of like body therapy. Not only it's music that feels so good that you can it just comes at you with it. All it has.
It was unbelievably. It was deafening. It was you
awesome.
Guys and then
thank you.
L.A. Guns like kicked us in the head too. I was actually talking to a guy who works upstairs. There's a guy named Dave who works upstairs, and we were talking about Bulla Boys stuff today.
Right.
And he had the best story. He was talking about how he actually crashed his car while listening to Freak Show. Which was the album that came out in like, what, 89, 90, and he was like,
that's
yeah,
brilliant.
It's like Freak Show. He's like, I was driving along, and I was, like, banging my head so...
I think he's told me that story before.
Maybe. He was like, I was banging my head so ferociously that I went off the road and into a concrete divider. So you've actually caused car crashes with your rock, sir.
You know what? What can I say? I just feel very blessed and very happy that they can do that sometimes.
You know, when the Bulla Boys, when you guys got tagged either for good or bad with sounding a lot like Van Halen at the time, was it? Were you guys? Do you think that was fair? Did you try to sound like Van Halen, or did you think it was just? Did people say that unfairly? Did you think it was accurate, or?
You know, I felt that it wasn't fair, but it was a double-edged sword, actually. You know, because of the fact that we were produced by Ted Templeman, and we were signed by Mo Austin, Lenny Wernicker, and Ted Templeman, and Roberta Peterson, who were the regime, wonderful regime at the time. Just they signed the most amazing acts out of that era. And we were very, very fortunate to be signed by them. Ted worked with Van Halen, and we were just, we were straight-out ass-kicking rock and roll band. Plug Ride and Marshall's. Screaming.
Right.
I had long, bleach blonde hair. I was always surfing, always, tan, into skateboarding. And we were just that type of band. And, people started talking about that. It was like really uncanny, the resemblance and everything, the bravado that I carried supposedly and the type of band that we were, very reckless and out of control. But I also saw it as being a band like Van Halen, to be compared to them was quite an honor at the time, because they were such amazing bands, still are, historical rock and roll band, that it was just like, wow, they're comparing us to just, to one of our heroes.
Sure, absolutely.
And it wasn't like we purposely went out and did what we did. We had our own sound, I always felt, and we were always. We always felt like we're a little bit edgier and a little bit more to left field than Van Halen was. So
we're talking to Mark Turian from the Bulla Boys. They're going to be at Outlaws tonight. Doors open at 8 o'clock. You're talking about that there was a band that came out, I don't know, around maybe 94, 95. There was a band who really clearly was just a Van Halen knockoff called Roxy Blue that put out an album at one point. And those guys, those bands certainly were around where they just tried to Xerox something that already existed. And I never felt it was really fair the way you guys got tagged with that. Around that same time, there were so many changes, obviously. There was, grunge and Nirvana came out. And is that like a change that you guys saw coming? Was there a general sense in the air that something big was going to change in the early 90s, or did it take a lot of people by surprise?
No, absolutely. When we were on the road, we'd all sit in the back of the bus, and we were all, we're music junkies. I mean, we're any type of music, or whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, we were always listening to it. And Jimmy Deanna was also very, very into it. So we were always listening to these new musics, and we're going, something's coming. We were really into listening to the Nirvana Bleach record and, Melvins and a lot of different bands that were coming out of Seattle at the time. In fact, we were the first band
that national act that had actually kind of discovered Alice in Chains and had them come out and play with us when we first started touring up in Seattle.
When you when you look back, what do you think is the biggest difference between that era and right now in terms of music, whether it's in terms of being in a band or in the industry? I mean, is it the internet, or is it just the is there a general vibe, or is it the difference of MTV? What's the biggest difference between then and now, you feel like, as a, as a, as a guy who is a musician?
I can answer that very honestly. I think everybody's taking themselves way too seriously these days. I think everything is very stifling and very politically correct right now, whether it be speaking about music, politics, or what have you. I think that we've lost that inner, like, inner child to have fun, no matter what age. And I really see that. We just got back from Europe and the UK. We had a wonderful tour out there. Oh, boy, Smashing Pussycat and That's Enough. And the crowds were just amazing, you know, sold out every night. And just people that really wanted to rock. They want, you know, they really, it wasn't about hip-hop, and it wasn't about this and, you know, what you're wearing. It was about enjoying the music for music's sake.
Do you think do you think it was better to be a rock star in that era, or if a, guy, if a band is coming up right now, you know, is this the better time, do you think?
I think, and I still, I see, hear it from other bands and bands that I won't mention that are very large bands now that I go see and I'm invited backstage, and they're just like, you know, we're not worthy, we're not, you know, that type of thing. And like, get out of here, you guys. But you don't understand. You're like, you're our legend. You know, you are that guy. That's so, so, it's just like so humbling to hear people say that. They're like, we wish we were around, you know, and you guys and Guns N' Roses and Smashing Pussycat, you know, and all you guys that came out of L.A., man, you know, boys, and, you know, it's a different time now. It's not as fun.
Well, there, it
you know,
really,
I hear that all the time, Eric, all the time.
It really was a pretty distinctive era. I mean, that the L.A. vibe, or whatever you call, people want to call it, Sunset Strip or the Cat House era, any of that. I mean, it was its own. I talked to Tracy Guns about that. It's very much the same thing. It's a very specific feel that you just don't have now. For better or worse, it's just, it's gone.
I'd like to throw out, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I got to a shout out to Tracy Guns. That's like my brother from another mother. He's so immensely talented, such a wonderful guitar player. We got off the road with him here in the latter part of the year, but had a wonderful time with him. Love that guy.
He was fantastic. He was really great. You guys, is it Bullet Boys Records? Is that the website for you guys? What's the official website?
No, the official website is Bullet Boys at MySpace.com.
All right, so MySpace.com, and you're doing the Bullet Boys site there. And
yes,
then,
and there's a tribute Bullet Boys site, which is not it. If you see a picture of the band, that's the official site.
Okay, and so tonight at Outlaws, doors open at 8. It's you guys and a couple other great bands, Brittany Fox, Enough's Enough.
I'm telling you, Eric, absolutely. Everybody come out, man. We are going to play just as loud and just as proud, and just, we're so excited. Just love coming up to Portland. I just feel like it's just like another home for this band, and we're always treated so graciously and so wonderfully there. So
excellent.
We're really excited about the show tonight, man.
All right, and the tickets are still available. It's at ticketswest.com, Safeway, Tickets West Outlets, or at tonight at Outlaws, 722 East Burns. All right, Mark, have a great show tonight. Thanks for coming on the show, my brother. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Cheers, everybody.
Thank you. There you go. Thanks, man. Have a great show. All right, there you go. Mark Turian from The Boys. Scotty, you want to just make sure that he's cool there? You know, make sure that he's...
Good interview, Eric.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Oh,
yeah.
I wish I had a camera so everyone could see the look on your face when he... Okay, good. When he said the wrong name, and you didn't know whether or not you should correct him or not.
Well, what am I going to do?
Oh, crap. We are so late.
We have to break? Okay.
Oh.
No more time for the news with Tom.
All right, Eric.
Thanks so much. Speaking of the Sunset Strip... Here's Axl Rose and Alice Cooper. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show on AM, the Eric Emerson Show, AM 970, Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Into the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Eric Emerson Show. Thanks so much.
Oh, Eric.
503-733-2970.
What are you going to do? Because this is going to continue on because you're going to the show tonight. So if you meet him, you're going to be like, hi.
Hi,
are you going to introduce yourself as Eric or are you going to correct
true.
Him?
Yeah, that's true. If I introduce myself as Rick, you'll have no idea who I am. If I say Eric, I talked to you today. Real quickly, hi, Devin. Real quick, what's up?
I just wanted to let you know that story about Anthony Kiedis looking at houses here in Portland was true. My husband's a realtor, and I got to go with him when he showed him a house. And he wound up not buying the house that we were selling, but he was there with his pregnant girlfriend, and it was just really ironic because we had just seen him at Coachella at the end of April.
Weird. Was he a handsome man in person, Anthony Kiedis?
Hell no.
Oh. Damn. Okay. All right. Thank you, Devin.
No problem. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you so much. Wow. Okay. I don't feel so bad. All right. All men live in the shadow of Anthony Kiedis. He's just one of those guys. All right. Well, no time to be fair to another caller, as they say. Let's see. So, yeah, tonight, Bullet Boys, Enough's Enough, Brittany Fox, Pale Rider, Outlaws, doors open at 8. And, of course, we're counting down until 07:07:07. Vanilla Ice, which is a week from this coming Saturday. More announcements on that.
Are you going to be on stage tonight?
I don't think so. I don't think I am.
I was just going to say, don't choke when you say your name.
let's not talk about it. Let's see, we're next seeing the radio correspondents Amanda Moyer, Lisa Goddard, and Jim Roop, as well as Mark Torian from the Bullet Boys. Rick Emerson show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio in the newsroom, Tim Riley, the PA, Scotty J, and of course the gatekeeper and Bullet Boys enthusiast, Dave Zinn. Like us next, Donna Mike at 7, Stephanie Miller tomorrow 6 to 8, Dennis Miller 8 to 11. We're back in 20 hours. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down. Do try to help the retarded and watch out for snakes. We'll see you all tomorrow, kids. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I have a headache.
It might be a tumor.
It's not a tumor.